This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Happy Friday, everybody. This country seems to be on fire in a bunch of different ways, and that fire is burning brightly today. We have a new story that apparently 30,000 Haitian illegal immigrants entered the country. A bunch of them are missing. 17,000 are apparently being allowed to stay. And I guess what happens, you get enough of these people at the border, the government panics because of the bad press and says, just let them all in. Just they can do whatever they want. Just make the pictures go away. It's kind of where we're at. So you know what? We're going to talk a lot about that stuff because we're hanging out with Ed Calderon, and you're an expert, man. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. My name is Ed. I worked for the Mexican government for about 12 years, doing counter-narcotics work, working against people traffickers, working against cartels, and specifically kind of spending a lot of time and experiencing the border on the southern side of it, you know, looking at some of these problems firsthand. Currently work and train people across the country from Border Patrol to FBI, Secret Service, people that just want to be safe. And a lot of the things that I showcase and kind of show people are directly related to that experience that I had down there. So,
and there's apparently, like, I don't know if this is too off the beaten path, but you're mentioning like weird occult stuff too, like
yeah. The
stuff that goes on down there,
yeah.
With like unsolved murders.
I do training for law enforcement stateside related to Mexican occultism and criminal occultism.
Whoa. So that's going to be fun. We'll talk about that.
Sure.
And, right on.
You know, basically showing them, you know, the current versions and symbology and trends as far as Santa Muerte, the veneration of Malverde, which is like a Mexican Robin Hood, to how some of these groups utilize some of these things in a ritualistic fashion to create fear in their enemies or to initiate people within their ranks by having them do crazy things like eating somebody's heart, you know.
Mm. Right on. Well, that sounds like it'll be a fun conversation. We got Ian.
I'm glad you're here. Thanks, Ed. Hey, good to see you, buddy. Ian Crossland, happy to be here. Thanks, Tim.
I'm in the corner as well. I was just texting with one of my friends. He's like, yo, I'm at this class with Ed Calderon. And I was like, oh, that's crazy because we're having him just next week. So I'm very excited to have him. I'm excited to hear what's going on the border. I'm afraid it's going to be depressing, but I'm looking forward to being informed.
But don't forget to go to timcast.com, become a member. We got a bunch of really awesome content, journalists. We are set to launch two new members-only shows, I believe, by next week. One of them is really simple. It's called The Green Room. When guests show up, we got people hanging out in the green room. We just film it. And so a lot of the conversation is weird, and you wouldn't expect it because it's not particularly, like, mainstream news. It might be talking about just history, philosophy, maybe weird sci-fi stuff, and just TV shows. It's just fun. And the next one is our mystery show. We haven't released the name of it yet, but we do, I believe, have one episode done already, and we're ready to launch the introduction of the show. So it's going to be really fun. They will be on the website. And as members, you get access to all of that extra special content as you're at your current membership rate. So we're just going to keep adding more and more stuff to the best of our abilities. And don't forget to like this video, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends. Now let's talk about what's going on in the news with this border crisis. We got this story from the Daily Mail. Mayorkas admits 30,000 Haitian migrants entered the U.S. as Del Rio campus finally cleared. Homeland Security boss doubles previous figure as he revealed 17,400 are applying to stay. 8,000 have been deported, but 2,600 are missing. Now, here's the crazy thing. Apparently, there's a bunch of Chilean and Brazilian IDs
These
guys have.
Yeah.
So they were saying these are refugees. Like, oh, no, there's an earthquake in Haiti. They're refugees. What's happened here?
So they've already been given refugee status by another country. That's why they have the IDs, which is an interesting, you know, I don't know a lot about immigration law here. Being an immigrant myself, I did a little research. They were already given refugee status by another country. So that's why they have those IDs. Those are part of their packages to be given that status in those countries.
But do you know the specific details about why they're coming here? Just economic migration?
So things are economically, they're pretty bad in a lot of places in South America. A lot of Haitians actually stayed in Mexico, for example, and a lot of them were given the refugee status in Mexico. After Trump lost the elections and after Biden came into power, there was a massive kind of like a spike in chatter and conversations in some of these Facebook groups attached to the migrant caravan groups that are out there. That's how they communicate. And the main narrative that was pushed forth is that the doors are open. Come now.
You were saying before the show, there's like massive networks of Facebook groups that are all like organized just to get people across the border.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I mean, they're kind of automated. Like as soon as something changes or shifts, like they're, don't go to Tijuana this time. Go through Texas. Don't go through California. Go to Texas now.
That's modern warfare.
Yeah.
Having a bunch of network groups automated to tell people, you know, oh, hey, now, like to push a message that triggers a reaction. And then what happens is you got to think about fourth and fifth generation of warfare, which you cite very often. But in today's day and age, you can't send a plane with a bomber. You can't send a fighter. You're going to spark an actual hot kinetic war. But you can send disruptive forces. You can disrupt local economies. You can spread political ideology. Or you can create a migrant crisis, which exhausts our resources.
You see a script being handed out to these people as far as what they need to say. You see advice to people. Oh, if you can't make the trip, but you have young children, have your children make the trip for you. So they can later on claim you, and chain migration can happen.
How's chain migration work?
If I'm, if I get granted citizenship, I can then ask for my parents to be granted,
You can sponsor people. So if you, as a legal citizen, right? Let's say you know somebody who lives in the Philippines. You could sponsor them and assume, I think it's 10 years of financial liability for the individual. And it makes it substantially easier for them to come. Not perfectly easy, but substantially easier for them. So you get these kids that'll come. The parents will bring their kids. Once the kids are old enough, they say, I sponsor my parents. If the person who's sponsored accrues any public debt, then the person who sponsored them has to pay for it. So you basically can just...
Is it easier to sponsor family than friends?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to sponsor friends.
And a lot of these kids that you see on the border that are being smuggled over, I mean, they're not voluntarily taking the trip, you know. There's a few videos out there. I've actually posted some of those videos on my Instagram account, which shows them they're clearly being... I mean, we had some medical professionals comment on there. I don't know. That's not my field, but I'm actually experiencing people under the effects of things like Rohypnol. Mm.
You know? Wow. Mm-hmm. What's it called?
Roofies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I've seen people under the effects of that with the lack of dilation.
So why do you think this weird stuff is happening where they're giving out scripts and they're sending out these mass messages?
I mean, it seems to be like an organized attempt on just moving a bunch of people into this country. And when I say organized attempt, I was in Tijuana for the first caravan when it hit there. And it was clearly organized. People are being transported. Organizers were being paid in dollars. The camps were being set up in certain places and were being completely supplied and funded by people from California driving down and giving them supplies. With this current version of it, you see people waiting on the other side of the border for some of these people as soon as they cross and getting basically distributed across the country. You see people on the southern border of Mexico, as soon as they cross, basically catch them with buses and organizing the transport on the way up. So it's a whole logistical process that's being organized by somebody.
Are they bringing them from South America, or are they there waiting to catch them when they enter Mexico?
I mean, they are basically the whole advice that they're given on some of these social media groups is to amass or organize in groups. It's safer for them, right? Different than it was with the last Honduran, kind of mostly Honduran migrant caravan. One of the reasons they avoided going through the central part of Mexico into Texas was because most of the members of this caravan were actually 18 street gang members, which traditionally have a rivalry with the 13 Mara Salvatrucha people. So that's why they went all the way through California to avoid that.
Interesting.
But these guys are Haitians, so they don't have that problem. Well, Chilean, Haitian, they don't have that problem, so that's why they went through straight into that spot. I mean,
any ideas why they're trying to get all these people to come to the U.S.? I mean, I know the people on the internet have a lot of ideas.
I mean, it's an interesting way of disrupting your
economies.
If you have enemies abroad, you know, you have people sending chemists to show cartel groups how to make fentanyl in Mexico. You have fentanyl-laced heroin exploding all across this country, and it's being produced in Mexico. And you have a cartel group in Mexico that is that grew exponentially during the COVID epidemic, and the only reason it did so was because it had access to the Pacific side seaports and an open relationship with a supplier from China. So I don't.
That's what I was going to ask. China seems obvious.
It's pretty. A lot of people in Mexico that observe these things closely, and I have a lot of friends that are still active.
It sort of feels more and more like China planned our downfall 50 years ago, and we're like catching it at the last minute. It's too late.
I mean, from my experience, you know, looking at some of these things progressing, you see this. This new cartel down there, Cartel de Jalisco de Nueva Generación, the new generation cartel. A lot of videos on them on social media where they have all this military equipment and they're raising their rifles and stuff like that. They are expanding like at a dramatic rate across the country, and people don't realize, they can't figure out how it is possible for these groups to be expanding. And they're like, well, I mean, they're a violent group, and they have connections in Mexico. In Mexico, they're obviously a proxy group for somebody externally. And then you realize that on the state side, these criminal groups are using Chinese banking apps to hide their money to send back to Mexico. Right? So,
wow.
And also fentanyl, just the massive amounts of fentanyl being brought into Mexico and now being produced in Mexico. People say, oh, criminal groups in China are smuggling it out. That's not how China works. You know, that there's not a secret Chinese criminal enterprise that doesn't talk to the government out there.
Right.
You know, if it's coming out of China, you know, it's Chinese state knows about it, you know?
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Legalized weed brought fields of classically planted marijuana fields turn into poppy fields in Mexico.
Whoa.
And somebody figured that
so we got to legalize opiates now, so that the fields will turn into what? Like,
I mean, so
the meth labs?
So that the heroin out there is not that strong, not like the Afghani stuff. So they laced it with fentanyl.
Wow.
So they legalized weed in Mexico, and then they started planting opiate?
As soon as you saw the legalization of weed in California, some of the crops changed into poppy. And this is around the time of the prescription opiate epidemic and how it was kind of waning down. And they were ready for something else. And that something else was fentanyl-laced heroin. And now the new thing is bogus pain medication laced with fentanyl. So now you're finding weird pain pill presses in Mexico, and they're manufacturing something that looks like a...
But this is killing their own customers.
That is the suspicious part of it.
Yeah.
Classically, cartels didn't behave that way. Sinaloa cartel wouldn't behave that way.
Right.
But this is a new breed of militarized narco-insurgency that is probably a proxy group of somebody outside of the country.
China.
I don't know.
That's the opium wars.
Come on. Who else would it be?
They play the long game. Yeah. And I mean, the opium wars technically ended 170 years ago, but I don't think they ever ended. They want to get back, you know?
Yeah, I heard that with Afghanistan, that the Taliban shut down the poppy fields, but then as soon as we came back in, we started them back up. Is that true? I don't know if that's true.
I don't have any experience in the Middle East. I do have friends that were out there, and they say that, you know, that was part of the actions of the U.S. in Afghanistan was to protect some of those fields.
Wow.
There's images of American troops in poppy fields. I imagine that they were real. I don't know.
Now, you mentioned that when legalized marijuana came to the States, a lot of these fields turned to poppy. I was down in Mexico, this is almost 2 years ago now, and I heard from a lot of people that when marijuana became legal and they couldn't make money off it, they started just hijacking avocado companies.
Yeah.
That's true?
That's a bit, but, well, not just hijacking, but paid protection. So Mexico has cartel groups, not just one. They have several. They have a few big ones. But one of the ways they operate and one of the ways they make money is not just selling drugs or trafficking drugs to the U.S. They also control a large local giant drug market and abductions for ransom and paid protection rackets. We recently had somebody get a pipe bomb for their birthday because he refused to pay for protection in the state of Guanajuato.
Protection from them.
From the cartels.
From themselves.
Yeah. So what you saw with some of these avocado orchards and some of the autodefensas or the self-defense groups that grew out of some of these conflicts out there, they would go to an avocado orchard. Avocados in Mexico and the industry around them are just multi-million dollar industries.
They grow on trees, right?
Yeah. But there's like a lot of them down there.
Wow.
And they
said, I would love to have an avocado tree. That'd be awesome.
That'd be pretty great. they said, oh, this is a good, you know, business you have here. It would be ashamed if somebody, you know, burned it all down or abducted you. So give us money to protect you. Mm-hmm. That's how it works.
And the cops, there's no cops.
There's no, the cartels are the police. So, I mean, that's that in some areas in Mexico.
So what's the difference? They come to you and say, if you don't pay up, we'll drag you out of your house at gunpoint. Sounds the same here. You know, pay your taxes. And no, I'm kidding. Not paying taxes in the U.S. is a civil violation, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, let me ask you, though. If the cartel shows up and says, you're going to pay us to protect you, and you say, okay, here's the money, they'll actually protect you from criminals and...
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I had the surreal experience of driving on a road in Sinaloa that was better than, that was cartel-made better than the public roads, right?
Of course.
So... during the COVID epidemic, you on the news, all you not even on the news, just the social media, you would see the cartels handing out supplies to people. You know, you would see cartels enforcing mask mandates in some places. If we find you without a mask outside, we'll get you with the board.
Wow, right?
Wow. That's so, one way to enforce a mandate.
So they in a lot of ways they are the government in some places. Yeah. I mean, there's no fly zones over some cities because they will put down your helicopter, right?
Wow.
So, yes, that's the thing with Mexico and in the U.S. as well. The U.S. refuses to recognize that its neighbor is not governed by a single entity. I mean, not publicly, it doesn't say it. It refuses to recognize that Mexico doesn't have a crime problem and has an insurgency problem. And it's not fighting an insurgency group. It's fighting several narco-insurgencies, which meet every single part of a definition of a terrorist group. I mean, if somebody sends you a pipe bomb for your birthday,
yeah,
what is that group doing?
If you don't pay your taxes, that won't happen.
So
you get a knock on the door and some guy in a suit will be like, you need to pay your taxes. And you'll be like, okay, I'm taking you to court. Okay.
I mean, the amount in Jalisco alone has somewhere around 10,000 people that are missing. Or bodies that were found clandestine graves. So it's mass graves are found in Mexico.
Wow.
So
because of cartels specifically?
I mean, cartels specifically.
You were talking earlier about the Juarez killing fields. Yeah. I've never heard of these until. Can you explain what those are a little bit?
It's a phenomenon that happened in Juarez back in the early 2000s where, you know, basically women were found murdered, raped, and ritualistically killed in a lot of parts in the desert and in Juarez. Mostly women that worked in some of the maquiladoras, basically the large industrial plans that work out there. A lot of weird rumors around that, you know. There was a lot of the media and the government in Mexico was saying it was cartel related because that's the easiest thing to say. Oh, somebody died? Somebody was killed? Oh, he's probably involved in the cartels. That's the way that you just get rid of.
Easy out.
Over 90% of all murders in Mexico are never solved. So, you know, it's a perfect place for that.
At what point does a gang become a cartel? Like, what's the difference, really?
I mean, a cartel specifically, if you're a large enough group where you have influences and or fear on behalf of the police towards you, you're a criminal enterprise. If you have if you tax people to start their businesses where you control, if you are in control of a drug route up into the United States, or if you traffic drugs yourself, I think you're kind of there.
I guess the definition of a cartel has to do with merchandising, manufacturing, and distribution. So I guess if you're going back to like the old trope of the mafia, that was just the local group being like, you're going to pay us, so we're going to smash your face up. We'll protect you, you know, protection racket. That's more like mob stuff. But with the cartels, it's specifically around the products and the manufacturing and the distribution. So I guess a lot of drugs.
I think specifically one thing I've always tried to do is just tell people to realize that these guys are defining themselves now. I mean, it's a whole new definition. you have a country like the U.S. that wants to not label them a terrorist organization, probably because of immigration.
Well, Trump wanted to send the army down.
But,
remember that?
Yeah, but I think it was a pressure thing they did to Mexico to try to get them to enforce their own borders.
Right.
So I think the only reason why you won't label them the cartels a terrorist organization is because now people fleeing from Mexico have a legal claim to asylum, because now they're leaving a terrorist group that the U.S. in some way, shape, right. or form, you know.
But the reality is, if they are acting like a terrorist group, then those people really are fleeing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's whole towns, ghost towns in Mexico, people that fled cartel terrorism, basically, that people that go but into.
This is crazy to me. Like, it's self-destructive. Why? I mean, why would the cartels do something that would negatively impact the economy that they want to benefit from?
These groups get formed, grow, leadership gets killed, one cartel turns into two. 40-year-old cartel head is now a 25-year-old guy after the other guy got killed, and it's a chaotic thing.
We talk a lot about the COVID stuff, and I don't want to get into specifics of COVID, but basically like a virus. We've talked about how Ebola is a bad virus in that it's so extreme that people become debilitated or get quarantined or noticeably sick, and that limits the ability for it to spread. And the viruses that are quote-unquote good or successful are the ones that your body doesn't react to. So the virus infects every single human possible and flourishes and lives on because it's not causing too much damage. I think about these cartels and I'm like, if you've got a town and people are doing stuff, you can extract, you can steal from those people, but there's a fine line, right? Yeah. It's killing the goose that lays the golden egg. And so you eventually find out, you know, this story reminds me of, or is similar, I guess, to the virus. They become so extreme, they burn out the area, cause everyone to flee, and then there's nothing left to get, and then they have to leave. There's nothing there for them anymore.
Yeah. I mean, Sinaloa, the state of Sinaloa and Culiacan specifically is a pretty good example of how some of these cartels classically operate. The Mexican president went to Sinaloa and shook hands with El Chapo's mom and talked to his lawyer. And then later, a few years later, 2 years later, he went and did a meeting with the local poppy and weed growers, like this televised with the head of the army next to him, and said, people are bringing fentanyl from China and all these chemicals. Like, what about the poppy field growers? And what about the weed growers? Like, what about us? We need to support the local economy, right? So
that's great. Which president was it?
This is Andrés Manuel López Obrador.
Yes, really? Yeah. Wow, him, huh?
Yeah. He's a pro Maduro, pro Venezuela guy. He's way to the left.
Oh, I heard that he does these things in the morning where he comes out into his balcony and like starts yelling to the people.
He does that every Mexican Independence Day. What he does is a thing called Los Mañaneros, which is basically goes on a rant for about an hour of different subjects. You know, the last one was he was demanding to Spain to apologize for the conquest, you know?
What?
When,
okay.
Wow.
When, most Mexicans are a mixture of native and Spanish. We're all kind of mixed, you know? It's like, it's a weird thing to kind of focus on when the country's burning, you know?
Mm. So let me ask you about the border, man. When you heard this large man with orange skin and swirly blonde hair say, build a wall.
Yeah.
What was your initial reaction with your experience being on the border?
The fence, because it was a fence, not a wall. The fence had already been built up and was already kind of highly secure in places like the border between Tijuana and San Diego. And drug prices, specifically cocaine, have been stable for 30 years. So it means that doesn't realistically, as far as a safety feature for the United States, a counter narcotic feature or safety, to keep the bad people out.
Isn't there like a point where the fence just goes to the water and you can just go around it?
Yes, there is. And there's always there's a bunch of border patrol there, and you know they'll tackle you if you try it.
Well, they throw you back on the other side or what?
No, they'll tackle you. They'll put you in a processing center and then put you on a bus, and you'll be walked across San Ysidro probably in a few, like right now the way things are, like it's the next day, I think, you know.
Doesn't that seem insane? That, like, you're on one side of the fence and you walk over and they grab you and then do all of this crazy administrative work instead of just pushing you back and back, get out of here.
Yeah, no. They just want to grab you and process you and then send you back, which is an amazing drain of resources.
Right.
Another thing, like, right now, during the whole Haitian push into the U.S., a lot of the the checkpoints around the area that were usually manned for counter-narcotic interdiction stuff completely abandoned. And you hear chatter on the southern side of the border with some of the guys that are, you know, crossing the border not to migrate, but to, with loads on their backs. It's Christmas.
Wait. So U.S. Border Patrol is not manning these?
U.S. Border Patrol abandoned most of their posts, specifically some of their, you know, some of their roadblocks that they have, and also some of the counter-narcotic interdiction stuff that they usually do in some places. A lot of these places where ghost towns were abandoned because they were all concentrated on that specific border area. And also just hearing some of the conversations, hearing some of the people that I used to work with on the south side of the border, they're all saying it's Navidad, it's Christmas, you know?
Are they,
the cats are away.
Are they walking across the border? Are they going through tunnels? Are they sending drones all across?
All of it. I found one of the first drones that ever crashed in Tijuana when I was active.
Is this the Biden administration? Or just...
What do I mean?
The border's open.
The border's open, and also these massive immigration influxes into the United States put most of your already outstretched resources into a single spot, which means it's Christmas for trafficking...
Everywhere else.
Yeah. Bullets and guns from the north to the south and cash.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This country is being strangled out.
Yeah.
Strangled. Slow demise. There's a pillow over the face of America right now.
And it's this border crisis is making millions and millions of dollars for people that are just waiting for the cat to go, you know, to be busy somewhere else. You know, this is tunnels. There's somewhere over 50 to 60 active tunnels on the border. I talked about fully submersibles way back in the day. Nobody believed me about those. Those are where we've been found.
Wait. They're using submarines to smuggle stuff and people and...
Drugs.
Drugs.
But you wouldn't use something as valuable as a fully submersible submarine for people, because then the people have a tendency to talk, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I came here in a submarine. But yeah, fully submersibles, drones, like squadron of drones, catapults, small... Catapult.
Oh, I heard these stories. They launch them over the
trebuchets. That's the first time I saw one in Mexicali, and I saw it and I was like, that's a trebuchet. Like, how do you know that word? I watched the KPBS one. I think I learned about them.
And so they're flinging drugs over.
They fling drug loads over. They RC cars, electric controlled remote cars, RC cars just speed out there. Drones, tunnels, people that have border crossing cards. Like there's a sentry program in places like Baja, where people that cross the border regularly get extra verified by the U.S. Cartels are aware of this, so they see, oh, you're a sentry pass guy. Let me put some load on the bottom of your car because you're already a trusted traveler, and that's an easy way to get drugs into the country.
It's like that thing that kids do when you're like shopping at a 7-Eleven, and then your friend puts a candy bar in your hood so you don't know what's happening, and you walk just like normally out of the store, and you not acting suspicious, and the kid walks up, and it's like, yeah,
that only with a Kia Coke, you know, that happens a lot on the border.
Basically, a kilogram of Coca Cola,
yeah,
just a 2 liter, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, some booger sugar. Yeah. It's a classic story that a lot of people get caught like that, and it's again, these guys are just looking for holes in the already hole written wall.
So Trump was right.
He was right about what?
the securing the border in general.
I mean, securing the border
specifically. So what you're saying is Trump is correct, and we should build a big, beautiful 30-foot concrete wall from sea to shining sea.
I mean, I think a wall is not feasible.
I'm kidding. I think, in terms of like focusing on the border and saying we've got serious problems here.
Yeah. So there's serious problems with things coming from the U.S. into Mexico. That's part of the issue. It's not just things coming into
What's happening the other way?
Bullets. Kidnappings? Bullets, guns, right?
Well, to be fair, Obama gave those people those guns, so that was a fair deal.
That's the Fast and Furious program.
It was bad.
That's like CIA delivering weapons to cartels.
I don't know a lot about the Fast and Furious on the U.S. side. I just know it was a program started by the Bush administration specifically and then continuing on with the Obama administration. Two of my friends were killed by some of those guns.
Wow.
FN 5.7 pistols. One of them was coming out of his house with his daughter in the back seat and his wife. Him and his wife got killed and the daughter lost her arm.
Oh my gosh.
The kids that shot them had FN 5.7 pistols, 18 and 19 year olds.
You were working border security for Mexico though.
I was not working border security. I was working generalized regional security basically. But a lot of our work was basically working against people that were trying to get stuff through the border or trying to get things from the U.S.
How does that work with the cartels then? Right, because the government's certainly not in complete control.
No, I mean. There's no border security in Mexico. There's a place where people cross by and there's border agents, but they're looking for taxable goods. They're not looking for, every now and then they'll get contraband, people trying to smuggle guns or bullets in. But they're really realistically not looking to secure the border on the Mexican side. And the government itself has a case of amnesia every 6 years. When the new president comes in, everything gets, all this, that was successful, this was failure, everything's bad. Get rid of all of it. I'm going to start this new thing. And they just change the name of the police, change the uniform, and same corrupt people come in.
They're in on it. Why give up? It's cash.
Yeah.
All their pockets are getting greased, right?
That's the thing. And it's, I went through two terms of that, basically do it 12 years working down there. It's unwinnable.
Do you think there's any value to the U.S. and of Mexico and the U.S. of America to become one country?
The whole concept of a North American Union. Well, I mean, I think the U.S. needs to realize. I mean, I hear a lot of people just close the border. Just pull the wall, close the border. That's our second largest trade partner, right?
We could, however, if we annex Canada and Mexico, conscript the Canadians to fight the cartels for us.
Yeah, sure. Just send them down there.
Put down
pancakes.
The FN 5.7.
That's probably. Well, it's another funny thing. When the when Trump was in presidency and the border was a bit harder to get across, people smugglers would just fly people to Canada.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was one of the ways they would just fly people to Canada and they just walk down.
That's clever.
There are places in Canada where you can see these videos on Reddit where it's like there'll be like a teenager standing in between, it'll be like U.S. Canadian border, and it's just like a chain link, like a chain going across like two orange posts, and there's no one anywhere near it. Yeah. There's one part where I think it's in Minnesota, where it's the honor system. You drive in, pull up to a booth, go up to the booth, like it's like a little shack. You go inside, pick up the phone, and say hi. You give me your name and say I'm entering the country. They say okay, thank you, and then you hang up, and then you.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
That will never happen, I think, on the southern border, but it's an interesting thing. I mean,
it feels like it's worse. Well, people are just walking through. Like, they don't even have the phone call.
They don't have a phone call. Yeah. I mean, there's videos, there's trail videos and rancher videos in Texas of just guys with AKs on their backs and dressed in like camo and stuff like that from cartel groups, basically. Armed cartel groups. In Texas, just moving around and just coming back, and
what if somebody has property up against the border, and then they see some dude with like an AK coming from the border crossing onto their property? I mean, do they have a right to defend their property and stop this guy?
I think they do have a right to defend their property, and they have the means if they're in Texas. The problem is that these people can get to you.
Yeah,
these people have a reach, and their reach isn't dependent on them crossing the border. Another weird myth that Americans have is that we don't want they're coming into this country. They want the cartels here. They're coming. They have been here for years.
Yeah,
they have blood ties in this country. They have.
They're in the military.
They're in the military. Yeah. They're in the border patrol. They're in. They're in politics. Apparently, they're everywhere. And you this this border fence and the border itself, they crossed it years back, and it's like places like Chicago, places like LA. When they legalized weed, some of these groups had already gone into the, you know, they were already producing weed, right? So they went into the legal weed industry. They did both. They were growing illegal weed in federal lands on the U.S. side.
Wow.
So they are here. Like I hear a lot of people talking about military intervention in Mexico. It's not Afghanistan. It's not Iran. It's not Iraq. It's right there, and also it's right here. If that happens, it's going to be an interesting conflict, because I don't think it's going to be like any conflict this country has ever fought. Specifically, it's going to be really close.
I mean, they have presence. Many of these cartels have a presence in all the big cities.
Yeah,
I know there's like graffiti all over Chicago. In New York, there was some big story 10 years ago about MS-13 like operating in New York City.
Yeah.
So yeah, man.
I mean, it's scary. And also the fact that you know, Mexico has a lot of problems, but also has a lot of resources.
Right.
Yeah.
Including one of the largest mineable lithium deposits on the planet.
Really?
Yeah.
Are they mining it?
They should just
splash water on it.
Well, there was a Canadian company owned by China that wanted to buy some of those mining rights, and that ended pretty quickly. Yeah. And then right around the area where some of this stuff is where the Mormon massacre happened down there, which is an interesting coincidence.
When was that?
That was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, recent.
So,
which is crazy, because isn't that a Star Trek episode?
What?
That like Mormons from Earth go find another planet, and then like an alien race kills them, and there's an incident where they go and investigate this Mormon massacre.
Are we talking about Next Generation?
Next Generation, yeah.
I've been thinking about that show today.
Yeah, I was into that when I was a kid. I'm sorry. So you're getting me.
Who would you be?
I'm misremembering.
What? Riker.
Yeah, you look like him too.
Riker. All the way.
Number one.
Riker, and I would get some of the data arms, you know, just crush people the whole time.
Okay.
I'm confirming what you're talking about. The lithium mine in Sonora, largest deposit with proven and probable reserves of 243.8 million tons of probable reserves, about 4.5 million tons of lithium as of 2019.
If the U.S. actually goes in there and into Mexico, I think it's not going to be about regime change or cartels or terrorism. It's going to be about
making batteries.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever put water on lithium?
No, I think I've seen it happen. It explodes, right?
Yeah, it rips the hydrogen out of the water, I guess, or the oxygen out. I can't remember.
That's very exciting.
Then it heats up really, really quickly and starts on fire. That's the craziest thing. Splashing water starts on fire.
Yeah, it's incredible.
But this is magnesium, like high school science class stuff. So
Yeah. Every now and then you'll see somebody with a smartphone with an old battery.
Boom. So when you were doing security, you're out on the border, and are you spending a lot of time out in the middle of nowhere in the desert and stuff?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
You ever see any aliens?
I saw a few U.S. drones flying places where they shouldn't be flying.
I was only half kidding. What I want to say is, like, have you experienced, like, weird things, creepy things? Yeah, I assume the answer is yes, right? But so, I don't want to make this, like, obviously, like, Bigfoot or Chupacabra. No, I mean, like, literally, like, have there been, like, weird people? Have you, like, seen operations happening? And weird stuff, like aliens.
Weird calls from high up people, you know, telling us to, you know, deliver certain people that shouldn't be arrested, you know.
Corruption.
Corruption of some sort, but on both sides, because these people.
Or undercover operations.
Could be, you know, who knows. Seeing armed Americans in Mexico working. And
whoa.
Americans working in Mexico armed. That's a thing.
So I've heard stories that there was one story I was reading about. I don't know if you read this one. Like a journalist went to El Chapo's house or whatever. Do you ever hear this one? I think this may have been Vice. It's been a long time, but apparently, like, maybe this is confidential information. I can't remember. Anyway, but he was working with Americans. His security were all North American accent guys, like top level former military stuff like that.
The New Generation Cartel has a training camp somewhere in Jalisco. And American SF something or other has trained them. So I don't know if it's an official, it can't be an official capacity, but some sort of former military specialized training. That's what you see out there.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy.
Chumba.
The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Has there ever been a moment where you were like, crap your pants scared seeing something?
Geiger counter being put into a drug tunnel.
Yeah, what was up with that?
And it went off like crazy or what?
No, but just the fact that they were testing the Geiger counter on drug tunnels was weird, you know? I was like, I knew what a Geiger counter was, and I was like, wait, like, is this some Jack Bauer shit going on?
Smuggling in nukes?
Who was putting the Geiger counter in there?
We just heard it. So usually when you would find something like that, you would get somebody on the U.S. side coming down into it to verify where it, you know, verify the exit point. Or sometimes on the Mexican side, we'd go down into it and we're like, hey, we found something. We're going to walk, and then we're going to ping you to see where it leads, you know. The military would usually do that. But experiencing some of that and actually seeing somebody, we heard the Geiger counter, I was like, should we not be here? That was like a weird unknown thing. I mean, I guess the worry by the U.S. government, somebody might kind of put a nuke into the country like that. I don't know. Like, I experienced that once, and that was kind of like creepy.
How is it that there are all these tunnels that they know about and they're still there, that they haven't like buried them?
Like, who knows about them?
Well, you just said there were like 80 or some that we know about.
People talk about somewhere along the lines of 50 to 60 active tunnels on the border.
And if they know,
I mean, they know they're somewhere. They just don't know how to find them, or they know how to find them, but they won't do anything to find them. Maybe. I don't know.
What if we did a moat and filled it with alligators?
Yes.
Okay.
I read once in the news that Donald Trump suggested that.
Alligator moat?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be expensive feeding all those alligators.
Feed the alligators.
No.
Also, Mexicans have a tendency to make stuff out of alligators.
Hunting grounds.
Can't do that.
There was a story nice where case. They claimed that Trump suggested building an alligator moat.
Yeah.
That's insane.
True. Was that the...
No.
Was that the Babylon Bee? Or was that real?
No.
It was real, like, yeah.
But they just wild make man. Stuff up. They just make stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, a moat.
Trump could nudge as a joke and be like, you know what we need is some alligators in a moat, right? I'm just kidding. And they'd be like,
it was an alligator moat. It's a complicated issue. There's no way you can make from sea to China and see a border wall.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the new parts of the border have already fallen over, you know.
Oh, wow.
This is the funny thing about when Trump was like, when he wanted concrete. The Border Patrol agents were like, we need to see on the other side.
Yeah, we need to be able to see what's coming.
Yeah, and he was like, oh, okay. And so then they experimented with like half bollard fencing, half concrete, and they were like, you still can't see a lot of it, and then it doesn't make sense. And so they were like, just do a big multi-layered fence with patrols, and that seems to work, and target key areas, and that seems to work. Yeah. There's a lot of areas that's like really hard to pass anyway,
yeah,
right?
Mountains, I mean,
and rocks and water.
Yeah, and also, I mean, what you want if you're a smuggler is to jump over a fence and have a population where you can blend into immediately. That's what you want. Another reason why you wouldn't have a concrete border wall or just a flat steel fence like that is because wind knocks it over. That's the simple reason why that's just not feasible. But even with these new iron slats that they made, I mean, there's a bunch of cartel videos and just smuggling videos of them actually making their own fake fence and putting it over the real one and putting a hinge to open it up or small concealed doors where they just pierce through.
So they'll cut it and then replace it with a door.
The door?
The door.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
They'll jump over it, rope ladders, you name it, they do it. It's interesting to see that. And again, they say it's to slow people down.
We were talking before about you were doing trainings on occult stuff.
Yeah.
So there's actually a position in which they're like, you need to explain to these agents occult ideology or like symbolism or
there's law enforcement every now and then reaches out. I mean, agencies, local, state, and federal sometimes reach out with questions and like do a lot of consultation. related to them finding a safe house somewhere in, I don't know, like the, I can talk about some of these, but, you know, somewhere on the East Coast, they found this house with a bunch of cartel stuff in it. Guns, plate armor, with a certain type of setup, and a giant Santa Muerte statue. Santa Muerte is basically, it's a, in Mexico, they venerate death as a deity. So a giant reaper statue in a place, and it had certain colors. The candles were a certain way. There was a plate with certain offerings. And, you know, five federal agents that are Caucasian from, you know, that have no idea what they're looking at are now asking me, like, what does this mean? And I was exposed to a lot of this stuff growing up in Mexico and also, you know, being part of some of that and going through my training and then arresting people that are part of the cult and also just going doing my research out there. So they ask questions like, what do these candles mean? Or what does it mean if it's this color? Or the statue was a black statue. It wasn't, sometimes you find them in rainbow colors or red or yellow.
Rainbow death.
Rainbow death. Huh. Basically, if you want to cover all your bases,
it's like
know,
an LGBT
love,
death
festive.
Well, it's
a, no, I mean that for real. Like.
Well, I mean, it's if you have money problems, love problems, if you want to kill somebody and you don't want to get killed back, and you want to have luck in a future endeavor, you go for a rainbow statue because nice. It covers all your bases.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah, but if you want to, you know, if you're in the profession of death dealing, you know, which some of these people are basically consider themselves agents of death. You have a black statue because she gives you the authority to kill other people, and you're under her protection.
Oh.
So small insights like that is what it provides to some law enforcement professionals out there that are finding some of these things and don't know what they mean.
Yeah, do you think that they're using them just to scare other people or that they really believe? I mean, I know it's speculation.
It's a belief. It's a belief. And it's not just the cartels. I mean, it's in the – I mean, I was exposed to some of it in the police forces as a hazing rituals. And it's like some of the people that I used to work with were part of the cult as well. It's like spread out. It's a desperate place. It's one of the most Catholic countries in the world. And some of these things just thrive in places like that. They have Santa Muerte, which is a death deity. They have Malverde, which is like a Mexican Robin Hood. The dude that used to rob the rich and would give the money to the poor. He was hanged, and they didn't allow him to bury his body. But where his body eventually rotted away and landed, they put a bunch of rocks there, and they started venerating him as a saint. And, you know, there's a shrine to him in Sinaloa. You go there, and you see pictures of people with their, you know, new raptors in the States, you know. Like, thank you for letting me cross, and I just came back to repay you what you did for me, or wow. Somebody with a gold AK somewhere, you know, like this.
Oh
you
my
know?
Gosh.
Wow.
So people, it's a belief system. So a lot of this is actually being brought with people stateside. So there's like a Santa Marta church in L.A. There's a roadside. Every now and then you find, like, I find, like, roadside graffiti and or shrines of Tumal Verde or, like, some of these things are, like, it's here again now.
Does that just mean Saint Death?
Santa Muerte? Yeah. Yeah. So the Holy Death. Death.
Holy
yeah.
Death.
The Santísima Muerte, Santa Muerte was the Saint of Death, basically.
Have you ever encountered some of these people, like, in your, yeah. your dealings with security?
Yeah.
Do they come off as, like, weird when you're encountering them?
I mean, they are realistically... They're as weird as a Catholic, because it's basically it's concealed within Catholicism, but it's basically a cult or a veneration of an Aztec death deity. That's what it is.
It's a fusion.
It is the last surviving lineage of any sort of Mexica or Aztec death worship in Mexico.
So you're bringing in the sainthood of Catholicism, and you're combining
So Catholicism is basically the cloak that it has concealed itself into right. to all day, right?
Right.
So back in the day, it wasn't a public thing. So you would see a Virgin Mary statue, and behind her there was a skeleton painted. So that's how they Whoa. Would hide their veneration, right? And even to this day, La Virgen de Guadalupe, the brown Virgin that they venerate in Mexico. There's an eagle feathered cherub underneath her pushing her up.
Interesting.
And a cherub doesn't have eagle wings, specifically black tip eagle wings. That is the Aztec war god. And the Aztec war god was given birth to by Cuatlicue, which later on turned into holy death. So in a lot of ways, it's always been kind of concealed in plain view for people. But now it's adopted itself into being venerated by marginalized communities, criminal groups, police officers, the military. You know, that is who venerates it. And its elements have crossed the border. And every now and then, the law enforcement finds them up here. And they're like, what the hell are we looking at? Right. You know? And, you know, some of the ritualized killings they do for video purposes that they spread on social media and stuff like that.
See, that's a bit different from, like, Christians, you know? Like, I don't think we get a lot of that.
Yeah, Alex.
You get some weird stuff, for sure, yeah. But.
Alex Jones was on before and talking about, like, these kind of blood rituals that they would do, the Aztecs and stuff. And yeah. I looked into it, and it's called bloodletting. It's an ancient, very well-known
bloodletting is just, like, you have a headache, so you drain blood or something.
Similar, yeah. And yeah. It's like, he was like, you put glass through your genital, and it's like, all bloodletting. That's ancient, weird.
So, I went through a bunch of weird hazing rituals coming up through training, and a lot of them were done by people. So a lot of the training that I went through first was done by Gotham members. Gotham members are the people that later on turned into the Zetas, which is basically a Mexican Army SF group that said, these guys pay more. So they just left the barracks and became bodyguards to one of the biggest cartel heads back then. A lot of these guys were the ones that were in charge of our training coming up. So they were pretty brutal in some of the training. And they also introduced a few weird occult elements into some of the training we got, right?
Interesting.
They would cut you to see if you would flinch, right? So, like, they cut me with a knife right there. And there was always, you know, some sort of pain or just suffering of some sort to see if you were strong enough. And there was always bleeding happening. It was a weird thing.
So were you undercover?
No, this is government training to get you into go to work on some of these things. And again, it's the occultist elements in that are everywhere. Like, they're infused into the culture. You see them within the military. You see them within the criminal groups. You know, I remember the first time we went to a house and we found this giant, actual human skull statue. In the bottom of it, it had a bowl, and it had the picture of the guy that ran us, or the guy, one of our bosses, was in the bowl and looked at us, like, took a picture of it and sent it back. And he's like, burn the house. You know?
Whoa. Jeez. You ever
experience anything in, like, pursuit of or investigation of, you know, some occult stuff that gave you pause or made you question, is stuff real?
I think things have a power that we give them, right? Things have a power, the power that we give them. So specifically, I think there was this lady who was she was pretty famous. I can't say her name, but she was pretty famous for being, like, the head witch of cartel people.
Oh, wow.
And everybody feared her. She had the mal de ojo power, and she could curse you by your sight and stuff like that. When I wanted to learn more about this type of stuff for my own research and just to know about it, to kind of gather some of this information to then kind of transfer to people that might need it later on in life, I helped out two of her sons that were in a stolen vehicle thing, right? So I helped them out, and I told them, I just need an intro to your mom so I can, you know, talk about some of these things. Sure. I went to her place where she would do her, you know, her work. She arrived in a Mercedes in the back, you know, changed out of her, you know, good clothes and put on a weird, you know, witch costume, I guess. Lady comes in. My husband is cursed. And he works for the cartels, and he's cursed, and I need my work done on him. Okay. I don't know the name of the demon that is placed on your husband, so I can't take this job. Slides over the $500 she just put on the table. It's like, wow, this is an honest witch.
Flex, yeah, wow.
But if things start happening at your husband's house at 3 a.m, I think I might know the name, so come back. As soon as she leaves, two kids walk in with a bag full of cats. And they get tasked with going and following this lady and going to her house and dumping these cats in her backyard.
I see. Okay.
She comes back with $5,000.
Oh, shit.
To get rid of this curse, whatever this is. Black magic at its core is just a form of weaponized psychology, I think.
So this is not something that made you believe. It's something that made you not believe.
This is something that made me respect the ability of manipulation that some human beings have. And reanalyze everything I thought was real.
That's classic con game material.
I knew a guy once, and he worked with a guy. And when I started talking to him, he told me the story about how he lent his friend $5,000. And I was like, what, why? And he goes, no, it's fine. He's good for it. He's paid me back before. And I'm like, dude, what happened? And he's like, yeah, he asked to borrow $500, you know, a couple weeks ago and said, I'll pay you back on payday. And I lent him the money, and then sure enough, payday comes around, he paid me back no problem. And then, you know, he needed to help out. You know, he was trying to get married, but his family didn't approve of his wife, so he needed, you know, to go fly back home to China where he could then, you know, sort things out with his family. And he's got a job here. And I was like, bro, you just got conned. He stole all your money. He's never coming back. Yeah. And that's what they do. You give me $500, I wait a week, hand it right back to you. I never spent it. Yeah. That way, in a week, I can be like, hey, can you lend me, $5,000? You're like, you know I'll pay you back. I paid you back last time. That's the trick. So when she's like, no, I can't take your money because I have to know if the demon is real. And then they go nuts on you. And then you're like, she was right.
Yeah. I
mean, something
happened. I call it, I nickname Mexico the upside down, you know, like when I own here. Yeah. It's a different place. People don't realize how different it is. We would get numbers attached to us as like a call sign, right? Or a nickname. My nickname was Esqueletor. You know, they call me Esqueleto. It's pretty skinny when I first got a
shirt. You got like a little skeleton.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Jolina. And I had a number given to me, a 2-4. And I had an upside down 4 on my number, and I didn't realize it was a joke. The joke was that my first job working was to cut people down from a bridge that were hung by cartels. That was one of my first jobs. Yikes. And talking about some hair-raising experiences, this was pretty subtle, but it made me realize a few things about Mexico. We got to this place, and they had two and what was remaining of another one hanging from a bridge. We got there, and I remember going there, and I got like, hey, bring the breaching kit, which is a pair of bolt cutters and a thing to knock down the doors. And I was like, yeah, we're going to hit a house. And then all of a sudden, we're going to go somewhere else.
Aww.
And I got handed the bolt cutters, and I didn't know what I was going to do. And I got there, and I was like, oh, we're going to, you're the one in charge of cutting them down. I go over, they put a flatbed thing on the bottom, and we just cut somebody down. And I was like, this is horrible. Older guy there smoking, a guy, Jaramillo is his name. Older guy smoking says, that's kind. They're being kind. I was like, how is this kind? I mean, at least his family's going to have a body to cry over and bury. The body is a gift. And I was like,
brutal.
This is kindness here. That's when
I've heard crazy stories about what they do to people, like flaying them alive.
Flaying them, explosives put on people, dragging them through a city. Horrible. I mean, the videos are out there, and some of the afters of these some things. Like, there was a guy, Pozoleta, was a stew maker in Tijuana. He never killed anybody, but he said that he learned from an Israeli specialist how to get rid of bodies, and he got rid of bodies at an industrial level.
Whoa.
With caustic soda.
Oh, wow.
And one of my guys ran through a field once and got his foot inside of one of the pits where he would dump things, and he had to go to the hospital for chemical stuff. And also the hole exposed the smell.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
Which is, to this day, I can't go to Korean barbecue places because it just freaks me out.
People in the United States do not realize how good they have it.
They don't realize how good they have it up here. They don't realize how some of this is also starting to pop up here.
Yeah.
And also how some of the stuff affects, some of the stuff that happens down there affects up here directly.
You were saying before the show when we were talking that like 90% of murders are unsolved in Mexico.
Over 90%. Yeah. So, I mean, it's imagine that.
I read this crazy story for our more attentive listeners. You may have heard me say it. I think I was reading it on like Reddit. This young woman was at a bar. I think it was in Austin or whatever. And she was with her boyfriend and like two of his friends. So it's like three guys and a chick. They walk out of the bar and she's like 10 or 15 feet behind them, just like whatever. And then as they're goofing off and walking, her being that far apart was enough. Car pulls up. They jump out and grab her and try pulling her into the car. She screams. Her boyfriend, the friend's here, and they run over and they grab her. They're trying to keep her out of the car, and the car starts driving, and they pull her out and the car speeds off. And apparently that's like these kidnappings in Texas and places like that on the border. you think you're in this American city, everything's going to be great, and then a car just pulls up, and the next thing you know, you're a slave.
Now, I'll give you this story, and you tell me where it happened. A bunch of armed cartel members dressed like federal agents go to a house, do a mock raid on the house, abduct somebody, and then they found him later on dead. Where did this happen?
Kansas City.
This is California.
Oh, I was going to say California for sure.
This is California.
Yeah. Where in California?
Right across the border, in San Diego County.
Yeah. Which one's on the U.S. side? Mexicali or Calexico?
Calexico.
And then Mexicali is just on the other side.
El Centro, Calexico, yeah. Arizona is the abduction capital of the U.S.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Arizona.
Arizona. A lot of abductions happen in migrant communities that never get reported. A lot of executions and murders happen in migrant communities that never get reported.
That makes me wonder, when you said 90 or more percent of murders are unsolved, is that accounting for people that just disappear?
No, that's not accounting for people that just disappear, which I don't have the numbers in my head right now, but they're pretty astronomical as far as how many people are just missing in Mexico.
Which basically means dead.
Which basically
means, or they could be sold into slavery.
Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting other aspect of it. Like, during the COVID epidemic, produce aisles were stocked, which means in certain parts of the country, child labor is allowed in the States only in the, you know, when it comes to agriculture. There's kids working in some of these fields. Governor Newsom in California has a winery that didn't close during COVID, and there was a bunch of kids working on those fields that are, you know, Mexican immigrants. They are working to pay off their crossing, a lot of these people. So in a lot of ways, they're modern-day slavery going on right now. Getting cross through the border, not like the Haitian push that came in, but like if you're a Mexican and you cross the border illegally, they have to pay. And if you can't pay, you get a little tab on your wrist. So when you get picked up on the U.S. side, they know you still owe, so you get processed in a bit different way. Some of these people end up in fields and in manufacturing places across the country, and some of them go into, if they're female, some of them go into the trade as well. Mm-hmm. And they're basically working off their debt. And if they can't pay it, their families that are already set up stateside are paying it.
Wow.
So
what's like the average that someone would have to pay for something like that?
It depends on who you are and when you're crossing. 5,000 is a number that I've heard.
Where do people get this money?
They don't get it, so they cross and they pay it off over years sometimes. And some people might owe $5,000, but you think they're going to say, oh, with interest now. Yep. So,
of course.
And these people get stuck into this circle. And also, if they don't pay and they get, you know, they get something bad happen to them, do you think they're going to report that to the police here in the United States? It's a whole silent community that just doesn't say anything.
It's perfectly upside down, man.
Huh. Yeah, I was just thinking, like, geez, start a GoFundMe to help pay these people off. But I'm like, can you even get involved in that? Because it's already this illegal trade.
You can't pay them. It just would make the system worse. It would incentivize more of the same.
How do we fix this?
First recognition of a narco insurgency with multiple fronts right next door to your country, and it is a narco insurgency. Recognize that the fact that the Mexican government is not going to help you fix the problem, you know, because it's part of the problem. Realize that they are terrorist organizations. They are their own definition of a terrorist organization. The U.S. should come up with a new definition for them, because they're a new definition. They're utilizing pipe bombs, mortar bombs. They're utilizing IRA-style tactics to develop explosives now on drones that they land on police vehicles.
Like in that game, Watch Dogs. You ever play that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah. They
do drones.
Drones with bombs on them, and then you could...
Or you can go to Michoacán and you can see it for real.
Oh, jeez.
Man, I remember warning some government officials when I was doing consulting on drone stuff. When drones started first, like consumer-level drones were first becoming prominent, I actually... there was this organization that sent a person to like these news organizations, and they asked me, because I had a bunch of expertise in doing work with drones. And then I was talking to them, and they were like, what are the concerns about safety? And I was like, oh, the most obvious one? Someone straps a bomb to a consumer-grade drone for a couple $100, and there's nothing you can do about it?
Yeah.
And they were like,
yeah.
Like, what do you do? Even if you get the drone down, it's a flying bomb.
It's a flying bomb. So the cartels are basically making homemade claymore mines that are putting them on the bottom of a drone.
And these drones are dirt cheap.
Yeah. They're and crazy. All these Chinese Alibaba-level drones, you know, but they're workable. And you have one of those go off high enough, the radius is pretty good to get a lot of people, or they land on top of a car and explode them.
Especially they put like nails and stuff.
Yeah.
Depending on how much weight they can carry on them. If they do a, you know, moderately sized drone, they can
there's
crazy stuff.
I posted a video up recently of a quad drone with a guy holding on to it.
Whoa.
And they were being lifted up, and it was like somewhere in the hills in Mexico. They're kind of testing that out for something, maybe breaking somebody out of prison or something.
Casey Neistat did that big drone where it pulled him on a snowboard and then like lifted him up and everything too.
Yeah.
That's exciting. I mean, I know it's a different context, but that's super cool.
I mean, if El Chapo was in prison long enough, I mean, he probably could have gotten out with a drone. That would be some Batman level villainy going on, yeah. Right?
I mean, this is the craziest thing right now. A drone big enough can just automatically fly by tracking GPS and then stop over you and then drop a rope and it can pull you out.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I remember finding one of the first drones, like a first drug load drones in Tijuana. And I'd never seen one outside, like in reality. I saw them on the internet and stuff like that. And all of a sudden I find this quad drone on the ground with a giant brick of meth, you know?
Wow.
And we still,
how big was the drone?
It's probably about that big.
Those guys, when they fly, their blades are strong and so fast, they'd slice your fingers.
Oh,
off.
Wow.
Yeah, no joke.
When we found it, we still had one of the guys still had his sirens on of the police car he was driving. Said, shut him off. And we can, that was one of several. Like, you could hear the.
So that one had gone down, but there were others still up there?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
And this is a while ago. This is about 2008 or something like that.
2008?
Yeah.
And wow.
And this is, they're better now at it.
Yeah.
According to most of those guys, they say magic hour is moonless night with fog. Mm. That defeats every single security feature of the border right now. A moonless night with fog. That'll get its magic hour for them.
Zero visibility,
and you can't fly. You can't send a helicopter out there. And
yeah, I think like infrared IR, you know, detection. But I mean, I would imagine they don't have all the advanced technology all over.
I mean, right now they don't have enough people to. I mean, again, it's magic hour for them. Like everybody is, you know, on the border. Well, they were on the border trying to quell this massive migration push into the United States. I mean, other parts of the border were probably ignored and were left alone. And just, I mean, again, it was magic hour for them. You know, what got through? A lot, probably, you know.
There's no end to this. I mean, I wonder if the stuff we see in the news. Actually, let me ask this. Does it feel like it's worse now than it's been in the past?
Yes. I think it's just numbers-wise, it's worse. Having experience, I went through the group that I was a part of, pacified the most dangerous city on the planet at that point, which was Tijuana. And it got off the most dangerous list. Things went back to normal. Economic boom, a bunch of high rises came up in Tijuana. It's currently going through that. And now it's back at almost number one again, right? And you're like scratch your head, like, we did all this work. Like, what happened to all this work? And then you start realizing that, you know, well, the politics went to the left on this side. We were put through a process of selection and also review. So I had to do a polygraph exam every year. And my financials were looked through with a fine-tooth comb. I went through an FBI background check. I had random drug testing, psychological evaluations, and this was tedious. They would go to our houses and take pictures of how many TV screens we had there. And if we had a new one, you'd have to ask. That ended because people started saying it was inhumane and it was against their human rights. So when the last day I was on the job, there was a guy the new guy that was in charge, which we investigated for cartel ties, was there at the office. And I was like,
wow,
weren't you like not here? Oh, I'm back. And all my back paid everything. He's back. And now he's in charge.
And yeah, it sounds like they sold you out.
They sold everybody out. And another thing about it is, like, I'm not a specialty guy. I know a lot of things. I train a lot of people. And I had a lot of weird training from the U.S. side and the Mexican side. All the people that I used to work with, which were also trained like me, that speak the same level of English that I have, that have the same training, same education, same experience, those people didn't have the opportunities that I had. Where do you think they're working now?
Where are they working?
$12,000 every 2 weeks. And they're working for one of the most largest cartel groups on the planet right now.
So they were like basically every year they were testing and checking to see if you'd been co-opted. And then who decided, like what president or what organization decided to stop?
The last president went through a process of kind of changing some of those things. Again, Mexico has 6 years of a presidency and then it just goes into a process of amnesia, or everything that the last president did, even if it was good, it's bad. And we went from the far right down there, which was Felipe Calderon, which started the drug war, to a president now that invited the Venezuelan military to march on Mexican Independence Day and shout, Viva Maduro, Viva La Revolucion. So that's what we're going through right now. And most of the people that I used to work with, I mean, they clearly were like, this is BS. Let's just go to work for the bad guys or the good guys, depending on where you're down, right? Where you are down there.
You can see what this like leftist Maduro stuff manifests into. I mean, this guy went to the poppy fields and said, "What about our drugs?"
Yeah, they're normalizing a bunch of stuff that is it's not normal, you know.
Well, it's a fire. It's a fire that's spreading.
It's a fire. It's also,
what's left over after the fire burns down the forest? Burnt husks.
And also, when I say normalizing things, I mean when he leaves office, things are normal. The president going to Sinaloa and talking about supporting poppy field plantations and shaking hands with El Chapo Guzman's mom and the lawyer and naming the former governor of Sinaloa the ambassador to Spain, which is the door of drugs into Europe.
Wow.
But he just does it because it's fine, because he's the president and it's okay and it's fine. And the behavior and the people that are being invited in and the open relationship to Cuba now and Cuban intelligence being all over the country now. It's just kind of weird.
I want to pull up this story real quick.
Sure.
This is from the BBC. Biden said, quote, people will pay for horseback charge on migrants at border. So yeah, I'm sure you heard the fake news that the Border Patrol guys were riding the horses. And the photos came out and the left and Democrats were like, they're whips. So then what happened is the Biden administration is like, okay, you can't use horses anymore. And now Biden's saying they're going to pay. The reason I bring this up is you were just talking about how, you know, once the left came in, all of a sudden they were much more in favor, or at least, you know,
it's like
complicit.
So the current president down there said, abrazos no balazos, hugs not bullets. That was his whole counter. That was his whole security policy for the cartels.
So for the U.S., whether it's intentional or not, you have Joe Biden now, based on fake news, condemning the Border Patrol guys. It's just continually weakening our security. I mean, it's erasing it.
Just knowing some of the people that were there, because I know some of those people that were there. A lot of them were Latinos. A lot of them were actually Mexican, second generation, third generation Mexican people. They're riding around in horses. And they're utilizing the strap. Have you ever ridden a horse? They're not. They don't have crops to whip. They don't have a whip.
It rains.
The rains. That's what you see. They are completely undermanned, undersupported, and they're trying to do a job, which is stopping people from crossing the border illegally. And also, I saw somebody go out down there trying to make it about race.
Of course.
And just seeing so. The U.S., and again, this from my experience training law enforcement here stateside, just went through the whole Black Lives Matter corrosion, which is a corrosion. Speaking of somebody that comes from a country where police are not viewed well, this leads down a very dark path.
Yeah.
People don't want to be police officers in the United States anymore. Police academies have whole generations that are just empty. There's places where they don't have police, you know, they can't pay them enough or you can't get paid enough to work in some of these places. That leads to a void, an authority and policing void in some places. What comes next? You know, Mexico comes next, you know, the corrosion of the small rules getting set to the side. Small rules get set to the side. You know, you can walk into a Target in California and just fill a bag full of stuff and just walk out and no problem. As long as it doesn't pass, you know, small rules. And I'm from Tijuana. You know, it's not a first world place. But I go to LA and I want to wash my hands afterwards, right? It's amazing to see how it's slowly shifting. The corrosion that's come in this country as far as being against law enforcement. Again, not all law enforcement is okay. There's a bad people in law enforcement. There's bad, horrible people in law enforcement in Mexico. There's people that did horrible things here in the States. There's people that are corrupt that are working for law enforcement. There are people that shouldn't be working for law enforcement here stateside that have a completely bad mindset as far as what they're doing. But what comes if you don't have a police force? You know? Like, I was in the Portland riots, day 101 of the Portland riots. I went out there.
Oh, wow.
People would be like, Ed, are you going to be out there? Yeah. What do you want to do? What do you want to see? I always want to go to the weird places. So I went to the riots. 2% CS gas was being utilized against the protesters, which is basically pepper.
Yeah.
And something you put on your steak. There was a snack cart going through the protest line, which is pretty amazing. There was a little Asian girl with a bicycle helmet shouting, you know, kill the police or something like that. And then somebody threw a Molotov at the police and it landed on the feet of a protester there. Who do you think all of them screamed for when that happened?
Of course.
And the, you know, state police walked over, put him out, and then went back through the line.
You want to know what would happen if there were no police? I'll tell you. If something like Portland happened in a place where there were no police, the locals would walk out with their guns and it would not be pretty. See, the issue is in places like Portland, where you do have the right to keep and bear arms more so than many other states, regular people know if Antifa shows up with Molotov cocktails and I defend myself, I go to prison. So they don't do it. It's because they're scared of the police and the police allow Antifa free reign.
Yeah.
So I've not been a big fan of, you know, the police over that specifically and over the lockdown stuff. And a lot of people have said, oh, you can't blame the cops. You got to blame the leadership. And I'm like, no, I think if the cop walked up to the guy and arrested him and said, you deal with it later, at the very least, you know, that would slowly start putting a stop to these things. If they started actively, you know, going where these rioters were going when they go into residential neighborhoods and stopping them from going to people's homes and threatening the residents, they're not doing it, though.
I was there for a night. And I'm not the, you know, the smartest, you know, man alive or anything like that, but I was there for a night and I could figure out that all these people there were not from Portland, that they were all bussed in and or drove in and all carpooled in. I could tell you exactly where they parked. I could tell you where their plates were from. I could tell you where they were car surfing. I could tell you just by walking around there and hearing their conversations. I could tell you what social media they were utilizing to organize their endeavors. And it was all a show. It was a played out show.
Look at the McCloskeys, right? You can criticize them for waving the guns around or whatever, but the point is a group of Black Lives Matter people broke into private property. And when they simply brandished their weapons on their own property, as people were on their property and said, get out, they got arrested and charged for it.
Yeah.
So regular people know this. Antifa gets free reign. Black Lives Matter gets free reign. You can't defend yourself. Remove the police. People start defending themselves. The riots are over instantly. People, it would not look good, and I would not want to see what happens. But I tell you, if the cops won't actually enforce this, if the justice system will not hold these people to account, eventually the police start losing support. We start seeing things like we did where Trump supporters and conservatives were throwing the Blue Lives Matter flag on the ground and stomping on it.
Yeah.
And then eventually they're like, I don't care, get rid of the cops, whatever, so be it. If you're not going to protect me, you're going to ignore what they do and then come at me when I try to protect myself, like we've seen in the press numerous times. People are going to say no to it.
It's a small
rule. As long as they're paying attention.
It's the small rules that go first, and then the big ones start getting corroded. And I think we're past the small rules part.
And, oh, yeah. It's insane.
And again, I come from a country where that happened probably in the 80s and the 90s. Right. And this is what comes after, you know, Mad Max level.
The cars. Fact, and you see the Haitian migrants walking back and forth.
Yeah.
There's no border. I'm sorry. There's no border. You can't call it a border. That's not correct.
It's not there. Yeah, there's no border. And also the people that are enforcing the border on this side are now even more neutered than they were.
Right.
So you go into, you know, hypotheticals and, you know, again, if somebody like some evil entity out there wanted to do something on the border, Christmas right now, Christmas.
Yeah.
Navidad.
Yeah.
You know, this is Christmas right now, you know, and also, who wants to go into border protection, you know, that you know now? Like,
who wants to go into any of these jobs?
Jeez, look, what that guy with the reins, he's being demonized by the president.
They took their horses away
right.
over fake news. Biden is attacking them, saying they'll pay because
people on the Democrat. This is what happens every single time. This is why, look, the Democrats come out and say Hunter Biden's laptop story is fake news when it was real. They come out and they say Russiagate is real news when it's fake. Ukraine gate is real news when it's fake. They say they're whipping people. It's fake news. How often are we going to see our culture, our country capitulate to the lies from these psychopaths who just scream random garbage when they panic?
Yeah, I mean, the racism thing with one of the most Latin groups of federal police out there is pretty insane. Don't get me wrong, I'm a migrant. Like, I'm a legal resident of this country. I went through my process during Trump's election, which made my process that usually takes 6 months into one that took 2 years. And I'm not a fan, and I was pretty disappointed, but I went through it legally, right? I went through it legally, and I'm an idiot.
You just wait.
And I'll say it in Spanish, que pendejo. You know, I should have just sat on that board and just crossed and got shipped out to any, you know, whatever.
I got friends. I have a friend in Eastern Europe, and it's actually a brutal conversation to be like, I would like my friend to simply visit, you know, 2 weeks, come see America for once. Damn near impossible. And then she's like, should I just go to Mexico? And I was like, well, I can't, you know, obviously I understand you're joking, yeah. Right? But that's the reality of, like, even people in other countries are like, that's why you see people in Africa fly to Brazil and then come to Mexico, because they know the border doesn't exist.
It's an open joke internationally that, you know, it's a hard thing to get a visa. But it's easy to just travel to Mexico.
Yeah.
And it's not, you don't even need a visa to go to Mexico. You can just violently cross the southern border into Mexico, beat federal police in Mexico, beat them up, cross the border violently, just make it all the way through, go to the border and be welcomed on the other side.
That they'll fight the police in the southern border.
They'll fight the police in the southern border. They'll throw rocks at them. They'll be violent towards them. They will go through communities, and all the communities are just doing this to them. You know, just go keep past.
Yeah.
When the first migrant caravan came up into Tijuana, the locals protested.
Yeah, I remember that.
They make Tijuana Great Again hats, which I may or may not have something to do with that. The locals made the mayor of Tijuana was wearing a Make Tijuana Great Again hat, right? But they were like called racist, like all these guys are brown, right? And also we just absorbed a whole segment of the population of the Haitian migrants coming into Tijuana, which our experience with them, they were pretty good. They melded into the populace, they worked, they're fine. Now these Hondurans came in, and they were saying that they were going to turn Tijuana into Honduras, right? They were saying that they were going to shoot people if they wanted to mess with them. You know, two of them got picked up by the cartels immediately.
Whoa!
Immediately, so they calmed down a bit. And then they were complaining about the food that they were being given because they didn't want beans. They thought that was pig food, which is, if you tell that to a Mexican, it's like, But that's the experience that the locals have had with them, and it's not a good experience. And it's amazing that, you know, the first camp they had was next to a school. They had to close the school down because they kept getting harassed by the people there. But the Americans would come in and hand out backpacks, tents, food, clothing. And these guys were like, thank you, muchas gracias, thank you, thank you. And then you would see that at the open air market being sold and flipped.
Yep.
Right? And it was like, is anybody seeing this? American media shows up, get the kids out. Put them around. And the females out. Put them here on the outskirts, yep, so they can get, that's what they need.
That way AOC can show up and start crying at the fence, mm-hmm, tricking a bunch of dumb people into voting away their rights and their sovereignty.
The last caravan that showed up in Tijuana set up right on the border and right in the middle of it. And I'll post this picture up tonight. I think I'll find it. Right in the middle of that camp, Biden flag.
Yeah.
You know, and I went around and talked to a few of them. They were pretty defensive. But main thing is that doors open. Welcome in. This is the time. The door's going to close again probably in a few years. So we need to go now.
Let us in, Joe Biden.
You said that in the 80s is when the little things started to become overlooked.
and then it slowly led towards.
I mean, Mexico's always been, the corruption's always been systemic there, but yeah, I mean, the true corrosion that criminal enterprises and been feeding the massive drug market in the States, and the corruption that kind of produced in Mexico kind of started growing, and how the corruption seeped into uncorruptible organizations like the military. Mexico had the military was like the uncorruptible, like these are the last defense. And then you had the Zetas, you know? And then you had a bunch of generals being arrested for cartel ties. And then that shifted now. That's why you see the Mexican Marines being utilized more now. The U.S. said, well, we don't use the Mexican military. We're going to use the Mexican Marines now. That's what you saw during the El Chapo raid. Mm. But now some of those guys have been arrested guarding cartel guys, bodyguarding cartel guys. Mysterious stuff happening in certain parts where they control the ports. I mean, if they are incorruptible and they are the leading defense in Mexico against the cartels, why are waste fentanyl flooding the country? Mm-hmm. These guys are in control of the ports. So
I think it's all for money.
I mean, yeah, for them, yeah. I think a big part of it is money. I think a big part of it is lack of opportunity. I mean, for somebody like me, growing up in Tijuana, either it was going into work for a call center, going to work for a cartel, or going to work for the government.
Mm.
And after coming out of working for the government, I can't tell you the difference between working for a cartel or a government down there as far as how it was at the end.
And call centers are rough. That's boring.
I mean, that's the opportunity you have down there.
Wow.
Right? Mm-hmm. I was studying medicine when 9/11 happened. And the economy just went in the toilet down there after that because nobody wanted to cross the border and have fun in Tijuana anymore.
Mm.
So the only opportunities for me and a few of my friends, it's like when I grew up in Tijuana, I was a skater kid. Skated the first time I did any lock picking and stuff like that. Now I teach that and stuff like that. The first time I did any lock picking and stuff like that, I would break into some cartel house that had been abandoned and we wanted to skate the pool and stuff like that. Right? So that was my childhood. And it was fun. It was interesting. Tijuana was a pretty interesting place. But it changed. A lot of my friends that I grew up with went to work for the cartels. There was a redhead kid that I used to know. You know, I went in to work for the government, and we both used to skate. You know, he was his shorties was his thing. You know that was his brand. That
yeah, Jet Muska.
Yeah, yeah, he had the Muska shoes with the zipper tongue thing to hide his weed in there. That he was a great kid. You know, hung out with him, and we just lost touch when I turned 20 and I went to work for government. He just disappeared. I found him working later on. I was walking across a gas station. We were doing some surveillance stuff, and he called me over. Like, Ed, oh shit! Like, wearing a AK-47 magazine carrier and an AK in his hand. It's like, hey, what's up, man? It's like, hey, what's up? Come over. It's like, oh, come over here. So I wasn't in uniform. I was carrying a gun. I was working, but I wasn't doing anything specific as far as being overtly what I was. Called me over, gave me a hug. It's like, hey, dude, like, what have you been doing? Oh, just looking for work and stuff like that. And he leaned over and said, I know what you do for a living. You probably better get out of here. It's like, yeah, dude, I'm sorry, man. Yeah. What's up with you? I'm like, oh, I'm just working here. You should come over. Like, it's a good, I mean, it's well paying and shit like that. I'm like,
dude.
I walk out of there, like, phone's going crazy because they saw me, you know? And as soon as I got back to the group that I was with, the military showed up and they shoot out for, a solid 30 minutes.
Whoa.
I went there afterwards and it took me about 10 minutes to find him. He was shot dead underneath a car. He was the only one with red hair there. He was a redhead. I stayed with his body, and I stayed with his body all night and called his parents to release the body. The war down there is different. It's not going off to Afghanistan and doing things. It's not going off to the Middle East. It's within our homes with mm-hmm. people that we speak the same language with. Sometimes we would kill one of them, and they would kill one of us, and the funerary services were at the same place.
Jeez.
It's a different war. And as far as what it produces, as far as individuals and people and bad people and just the the methodology that is being showcased as far as the first people that we've seen in the Western Hemisphere weaponize drones are the cartels. And that's a light that is now like ideological and methodological idea now that is out there. The first people that weaponized torture videos and stuff like that on social media were the cartels, not mm-hmm. ISIS. Yep. ISIS got the idea from the cartels. Yep. It's turning into the school, you know. It's turning into a school of thought, of method. It's turning into a producer of people, of bad people and good people, maybe. I don't know. But of people that are capable, you know. What you saw in Afghanistan when the CIA went in there and trained some of the local populace to fight the Soviets, and what that later turned into. The U.S. trained people in Mexico. I was one of them. And what is that going to turn into in a few decades? You know,
same thing it always does.
You know, it's a scary thing that I don't see this covered on the U.S. side a lot, and people don't talk about it that much. Or if they do, it's like something that's in the future for them. Like they're coming here eventually. They'll come here. Like it's here already. That's a scary part of it. That just the ignorance around it.
You think if people learn Spanish, it will help?
I think all of you are going to be speaking Espanol or Mandarin in a few years.
One of those two.
Yeah.
Mandarin. Probably. We should be teaching kids like 6 or 7 languages in school.
Well,
yeah.
You know,
we don't. Other countries do. We don't.
Yeah.
You can't get into a career path in Mexico unless you know English. And it's like
that's true for a lot of countries, though.
Yeah. It's always been interesting for me to like meet people in the States that don't speak another language. It's pretty weird, right?
Yeah.
That's most, I'm pretty sure, right?
It's, I mean.
Si. nice try.
Un poquito.
Un poquito. Like, I travel across the country every weekend. I do classes all over the country. So I get to see weird places and experience this country. For 3 years, I've been traveling nonstop. So it's just interesting seeing going from LA to Alabama to going to, like, living in Kentucky for a bit. And everybody was like, hey, Ed, aren't you worried about Kentucky? It's very racist. It's like, Mexico's very racist. these people are amateurs.
Yeah, America's like one of the least racist places I've ever been to. You know, maybe it's hard to quantify exactly how racist a country might be, especially like you go to some of the Scandinavian countries and they're like arguably way more racist, but some people might be like kind of not. But I'll tell you this, I think Sweden is super, super, super racist.
Okay.
Yeah, they're the kind of racist where they really don't like non-Swedish people.
Yeah.
But they openly pretend like they're not racist, so they do a bunch of things to make it. They want to make it seem like they're not racist. And they're super welcoming,
yeah.
But then behind closed doors, they're like, others are not. Yeah, totally, no, legit.
We have blackface comedy still on TV in Mexico.
Oh wow,
wow.
There's a comic called Memín Pingüín. People can research this, and you tell me that's on the newsstand still. So it's. There's all of the telenovelas and all the news and a lot of the popular culture down there. Everybody on TV is Caucasian, the Mexican Caucasian people, because that's our idealized version of beauty, you know?
Wow.
You give a kid a brown Barbie and a white Barbie and ask the kid which one is the evil one.
Oh, wow.
No way.
That's an experiment they did down there.
Yeah, so what's the result?
I mean, they'll raise the brown one.
And what do you think? What do you think if you did that in the United States today to a kid, which one do you think they would raise up?
The white one.
That's right. Yeah, isn't that weird?
Diablo Blanco.
How about just like, I don't know, you can't tell if they're evil or not.
Well, I mean, that's
it's
too hard.
Yeah.
And it's, as far as the racism thing, I get a kick out of seeing some of the commentary as far as racism here in the United States when I, you know, like, go to Asia, you know, and just see how different Asian countries treat each other. Go to Mexico. I'll tell this story about my family. Can I tell this? It's just a small, short story. My daughter is on the light side. You know, she's a bit light skinned. My niece has a daughter, and she's a little on the brown side. In Christmas, my dad put my niece's daughter on his knee and my daughter on his other knee. He told my daughter, "Tú eres la princesa. You're the princess of the family." And niece's daughter says, "Like, what about me? You can be the princess's maid."
Wow,
that's my dad. That's my dad.
Yikes!
That's
so
my dad.
Thanks,
Dad.
That's how the culture is down there.
That's how it is in Brazil.
Yeah.
So when I was down in Brazil, I've been down there several times. I actually have a visa,
And what I was being told by our fixer, our local guy, our friend, he's like a pothead on the headshot. He was like, there are people who are both black. And he was like, and they'll argue with each other over who's blacker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because like, it's bad. And they're all extremely racist, even against themselves. And he was like, it's crazy to see that people who are darker skinned will like, they'll be like a grandmother. And then there'll be a picture of her with her husband and their kids. And it's like having more and more white kids, and then their great granddaughter is like white, and she's like, "How proud am I?" That's really weird to me. Like, how racist these people are.
Just to get it clear, my dad is brown. You know, he's not like, you know, that it's just that's just how things work outside of the United States. You know,
and people, these college kids, they don't get it. Know. They're like, "America's racist."
No, come down,
dude.
Come down.
Not only that, but I'm like, whenever I hear one of these people say that America's racist, I'm like, "Have you ever spent 10 minutes in a skate park in America?" You want to go somewhere to hear the N word more than any, go to a skate park. I'm not even kidding. It's like every other word.
Yeah.
Cause it's like an urban culture thing now, I guess, for these kids.
Yeah. My mind gets blown when I see second generation, third generation Mexican, you know, kids here, and they use the N word more than anything. It was like, why are you using that word? That's not a, you know, again, I'm new here, so I don't know.
Yeah.
So I'm just hearing it. I'm like, wow.
Let's go to Super Chats, everybody. If you haven't already, smash that like button. Subscribe to the channel. We love hanging out on Friday nights. We always try to just kind of like chill, lay back, and make Friday nights just a little different. Not so heavily focused on like the news cycle of the week or whatever like we do in the earlier in the week. It's more chill, more chill. So smash that like button. Send your Super Chats. We're going to read some of your comments right here. All right, let's see. Jackson Dowdle says, can you have a debate between an ANCAP and a populist like Brian Kaplan and Jack Murphy? Yes.
Brian Kaplan.
Not familiar with who Brian Kaplan is, but, you know, we can certainly organize something like that. That'd be fun. All right. This question, I'm assuming, is for Ian. Ducktator says, so did any of the cults ever manage to summon Cthulhu? Is that what actually happened in 2020?
I defer to Ed.
I mean, I don't know. I gave a death whistle to Joe Rogan that he blew, and that everybody blames COVID on that, so I don't know.
No, for real?
Yeah. So in Mexico, they have these death whistles. It's an Aztec death whistle. Supposedly, when the Aztecs would attack a village, they would blow those every night before they attacked to just keep people up, you know?
Yeah.
And then
he blew it.
I said, that's pretty cool. You want this? Like, oh, yeah. He blew it on the show.
Yeah. Like, so, wait, Joe Rogan blew the death whistle on his show?
Yeah.
That proves it.
There's a few of them, you know? So maybe that.
No fear.
Maybe, I don't know if it was Cthulhu. Maybe somebody, Aztec version of Cthulhu, you know?
Yeah, I guess the answer is no. Short answer.
All right. Steven Valdez says, Ed is a legend. Ed, are you ever going to write a book?
Yeah. It's not what people think. I'm not... Most of my writing is going to be related to post-traumatic stress, processing.
Yeah. You were saying psychedelics have helped.
Certain types of psychedelics have helped in the processing part of it, yeah. Every now and then I write these things called fever dreams and I post them up on my Instagram account and they seem to touch people. My world has ended a few times in a lot of ways. And talking about some of the traumas, talking about some of the—I mean, I'm 9 months on the wagon right now.
Ooh. So it was like, how many years were you involved in this experience?
12 years working, and right now 6 years on the road, teaching, training, and stuff like that. So it's been a road.
Before we move on, I have to ask you: do you think that the reason that some of these military members and police officers use this symbol of Santa Muerte is because it takes some of the guilt of killing other people off of them?
It is definitely yes.
They have dispensation.
In a place where the government doesn't really have your back, and there is no realistic, so like in the U.S., you go off and fight for your country. And you get back, and sometimes you get flag waved on you. You get, you know, if you wear a uniform, you fly. You can fly for a discount or for free, and you get preferential treatment if you're a veteran and stuff like that. There's no such thing in Mexico. Mm. You get spit on. Oh, what do you do? Like, I hid what I did for a living for a long time from my family because it's something to be ashamed of. So there's no concept of a veteran in Mexico.
Right.
Although it's clearly a giant war that we just went, that we're currently still going through.
Right.
So if you don't have any support, if you don't have any, I learned about post-traumatic stress when I came to this country. I didn't know what that was. You know, that's the level of just abandonment that the people have down there.
Wow.
So I think part of that is that, you know, just seeking some sort of comfort or some sort of backing in something that is as dark and or as light as a death deity.
Hmm.
You know, that's what I think, that's a big reason why some of that is so popular and prevalent down there.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. John Doe says it costs $2,500 for a U-Haul from Maryland to Florida, but only $600 for a U-Haul from Florida to Maryland. They claim supply and demand. Well, see, it's really simple. If you're in Maryland, there's probably no trucks because everybody's fleeing. If you're in Florida, there's a ton of trucks
because nobody's leaving.
Because everybody's fleeing to Florida. So if you want to go back, it actually works out really well for them because you're basically doing them a service, bringing the truck back. Otherwise, they got to go pick the truck up and then bring them back. So yeah, it costs more money. How about that? All right, here's a good one. Jason Bryan says, did Dim Fool talk about the Arizona audit yet? No, we didn't. Why? It just came out. So, you know, I often wonder to myself, I'm like, there's a lot of people who jump the gun on stories and then get them wrong. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this thing was like announced, I think like 4 p.m., and there's like no way I'd have enough time to go through what they said to talk about it on a show. But, you know, here's, I'll tell you this. The other night, a whole bunch of stories emerge where they said the Arizona audit confirms Joe Biden won. Okay. They didn't actually even see the audit when they wrote those stories. And that's the important detail, because I'm pretty sure the audits don't actually make any strong assertion like that. What there is something going around. It's showing a list of like failure rates, basically like duplicate votes or things like that. So there's a lot to go through. I have not fact checked any of it. And by the time we're going to do a show on a Friday night, there's just, look, I got to tell you guys, the worst possible day to release information like this is on a Friday. Like everyone's tuned out. View counts are always way down. Honestly, I don't get it. And then they give the media an opportunity to preempt them on a Thursday, which is not a good day, but not a Friday. It's better than a Saturday, I guess. But seriously, a Friday evening is when you publish news to die.
Yep.
So I'll look into it, and I'm going to go through all of it. Absolutely. And I got to tell you, I think it's a lot of what we heard from Matt Brainerd. Check out the members-only segments at timcast.com, and then we'll see what we can get to in those when we break it down. All right. Montana Linderman says, today's my birthday and I'm stuck at work, but at least I have Tim and everyone to listen to.
Woo.
I watch you guys every night. You guys are amazing. Montana, thank you for your super chat. And thanks for watching and listening to the show.
Happy birthday.
You know, it's just we look at cameras and we talk about stuff. Sam Finley says, Ed Calderon makes James Bond look like a punk. Well then.
Jaime Juan, not James Bond.
All right, let's see. Trevor Cameron says, Tim, going to play some more D&D? Does the DM have a hard time keeping track of initiative? Check out my Kickstarter and FB, Deck of Heroes and Fiends, October 1st. Well, all right then. Yes, we do plan on playing D&D. All right, let's see. A lot of people want me to talk about the Arizona audit, and, you know, obviously there's a bunch of super chats throughout the show being like, talk about it, talk about it, talk about it. It's like, I have to go through it and like fact check it. Here's the thing. With a lot of stories like Afghanistan, initially my assessment is based on the preliminary reports. And then it turns out, like, I didn't realize in the start of the Afghanistan withdrawal that we abandoned Bagram the way we did.
Mm-hmm.
So my assessment was like changed. And I was like, wait a minute, I read this Wall Street Journal article. Look what they're doing. Here's the challenge with the AZ audit. As you probably already know, the mainstream media is not going to do a fair assessment of what the details are, which means this is one of the stories, along with many other, that we actually have to have our crew dig into, and we're going to do it. We're gonna look into it. That being said, my opinion is we want to know the easiest way to make sure a Republican never wins again is convince them all you can't win.
Mm.
And then they don't go out and vote. So you've got Democrats going door to door. Look at it this way. New York City. How many people live on one city block in New York City? A lot.
10,000?
Just a guess.
Now, one, the same distance in a rural county, how many people live on that same distance? One?
Yeah. Two.
So when you're in New York and you've got universal mail-in voting and two little Democratic activists can say, we're going to spend, you know, an hour on one city block, they can talk to 1,000 people. If a Republican wants to go to a suburban area, one city block is going to get them, what, 25? So with universal mail-in voting, denser population areas are substantially easier for voter turnout drives. They knock on the door. Did you vote yet? You didn't? There it is. Fill it out. Have a nice day. Did you vote yet? Republicans doing it? Serious disadvantages.
Yeah.
So I think you got to focus on your ground game, your organizational powers. And I'll tell you this, whatever may be going on here, I think it's demoralizing people. I think the audits are great. I think do investigations, build the trust. But man, do conservatives need to get their ground game going. And libertarians, to be honest. Democrats have ground game, dude. They know how to go door to door. And they have the advantage of population density. I think that plays the biggest role. And that's exactly why there was such a major push for universal mail-in voting. It's overt. That's why they were screaming when they said Donald Trump was stealing mailboxes. Because that is what gives them their major advantage. And it's not breaking the rules. It's like the law was changed for universal mail-in voting.
I had a friend that did work the Obama campaign in 2012, and he said it was so incredibly organized and effective. And then he worked the Bernie Sanders campaign in 2016. He said it was terrible. So I have a feeling it's not just Democrats. It's this establishment.
Exactly. They know how to run a machine. And the establishment Republicans don't want Trump or the populists. So they're like, it's all you. And it's much more difficult. All right. Immediate Casualty Care says, perfect guest for the topic at hand, as well as a guy to learn from when it goes wrong. Ed was kind enough to do an IG review, our low profile trauma kits, asking for nothing in return. A good man who knows all things. Bad guy.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
What is that? What were those?
It's a low profile way to carry around medical equipment with you. You know, I mean, it's a scary time and I'm not, you know, fear mongering, but it's a pretty good idea to have at least some basic knowledge and materials to stop somebody from bleeding out.
We have like 30 medical kits here. We had like six, and I was like, Tim, can we get two more? And he bought like 20. I was like, yeah, that's a good idea.
Well,
just pass them out if we need to.
30 employees. Yeah.
Give them to the
neighbors. We've got multiple acres.
Animals.
It's a weird thing. Like, it's people want to go and shoot guns and train how to fight with knives and do all this stuff, but they don't want to learn how to plug holes.
You're going to get hurt. Yep.
Or like every now I do training related to counter abduction, and everybody's like, oh, when are we going to learn how to get our handcuffs? That's coming. But first we need to talk about Narcan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And first we need to talk about roofies and how to flush your system and how why? Chemical restraints are a thing.
So you do hostile environment training, stuff like that?
Yeah, non-permissive environment training is what I got, what it's called. I didn't name it that. That's the first people that I started training here in the States said, oh, that's non-permissive environment training. Okay.
Do you ever get these like really arrogant people who are just like, they think they know more than you. They think they're hot stuff and they're going to survive the apocalypse.
I get all types. I get the some people that are preppers that prep, but they can't, you know, run a mile.
Yep.
I get the people that are really worried about COVID and they want to wear a gas mask when they go outside, but they would just take some vitamins and, you know, eat healthy and just, you know, run a bit. You know, a little bit of that might help you. I get all types.
I did a hostile environment training. And it was for insurance purposes. They made me do it.
Of course.
But I've actually, you know, I'd actually been on the ground in a bunch of civil unrest, civil conflict, and I was in Ukraine before it erupted into like the separatist fighting. I was in Venezuela, which was like probably the scariest, where I had to flee the country. And so they made me do this training, and there was like a weather guy there who was like trying to give advice to people. And I'm just like, like, weatherman, you can't tell this woman what she's going to do when she gets abducted and there's landmines. Sorry. You have no idea what you're talking about.
One of the things that I kind of struggle with, a lot of the stuff that I do is like, I didn't go through SEER training, or I wasn't part of the American military. A lot of my teachers were like, the first person I saw get out of handcuffs and teach me how to get out of handcuffs was a 15-year-old kid that was a meth dealer. Mm-hmm. Right. The first person I saw that showed me how to, you know, make something to cut through zip ties with a Kevlar cordage was a fisherman.
Was that when you were a kid, when you were younger?
No, just working and meeting weird people. One of the things that I find like the most like off-putting is people not realizing the teachers are all around us and they're not all going to wear a green beret and been a military guy or something like that.
Yeah.
Most of the people that know and study the craft of getting around things are criminals. Those are the best conversations to have. And if you don't know, if I go to do a class and I start talking about bribing a public official, and Americans start getting like, you can do that? Yeah.
They don't get it, man.
You don't get it.
We got scruples here, huh?
You know, it's normal is a fluid concept.
Mm, true.
And you can't travel with your normal. That's the first red pill I give people.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Egypt is certainly crazy. Just like When I try talking to, I'll tell you this. Here's a challenge in the United States. When I was doing the heat training, hostile environment stuff, someone asked the guy running the course if women should be worried about sexual assault. And his reaction was to stutter and go, men can get raped? Yes, men. It's like, dude, see, this is the problem. In America, they can't say certain things because they get sued for harassment or treating people, you know, not like, you know, not like for violating people's rights, I guess. When
sensibilities.
Yeah, when you say, like, there's a reality of that women, you know, a guy will get killed and a woman will get raped. Like, when you're dealing with a lot of these places around the world. And then when I have to deal with stuff like being in Egypt, what the security company is going to allow a woman to do versus what they're going to allow a man to do, you'd probably have every feminist in this country screaming, it's not fair.
Yeah.
There was a story about, I could be getting this wrong, so just keep that in mind. A reporter was out with Vice was out, I think, in Algeria. And she was told not to go to the soccer stadium because women aren't allowed. And she said, I'm going to do it anyway. Mm. And she got assaulted and then sued Vice over it, even though the security people are like, you can't do that.
Yeah.
But there are these people who think that Algeria is going to be like America.
Yeah.
And they don't realize, like, you walk in the wrong neighborhood and they should be like, that's a beating.
Yeah.
They don't realize that in Egypt, it's like you walk in the wrong neighborhood and, like, you're not covered up and you're not here with your man. You're in trouble.
The normal is a fluid concept. You can't travel with your normal. You can't travel with your Bill of Rights. That's an amazing thing. Also, like, seeing Americans in Mexico doing, like, oh, yeah, just this guy tried to push me in a van and I just stabbed him in the face. I'm just going to wait for the police here. Like, that guy was probably
a... That was a cop. Was a cop.
What do you recommend? Go to the embassy or flee.
But run away.
Not being allowed to, not being able to are two different things. Outside of the United States, females during training, like I do restraints or, you know, handcuffs, zip ties, duct tape, show people how to get out of that and also how to, you know, manage some of that stuff. Women always get more on them because they're going to get it the worst.
Yep.
That's my way of treating them differently.
Mm-hmm. Now, to be fair, though, we did in our training do a scenario where we got surrounded at gunpoint and all the women were brought into a barn. And then the trainers told the women to start screaming, you know, bloody murder. And then the guys outside are laughing, saying, I think you know what we're doing and stuff like that. Because he was trying to make that point.
Yeah.
So it wasn't all overtly trying to avoid the realities of these things.
Do you have, like, we talk about basic, like, natural rights in the United States. Do you have that in Mexico?
Yeah, but there's nobody to enforce them.
So they don't exist, really?
Human rights are a thing in Mexico, but usually they only involve people that are, you know, have enough money to kind of put them on their side. There was we support a small media group that we work with called Demoler. It's on Instagram if people want to check it out. Basically just cartel-related news out of Mexico, and it's all, you know, verified by myself and other people that work around it. There's a guy that stole a few candy bars from the store and got placed into a process, legal process for three candy bars, a very lengthy one.
Wow.
And in the same vein, there's a police commander that was involved in the massacre of 135 people or something like that, that is currently, you know, he just had lawyered up and there's no problem, right? And we did this comparison. If you have enough money, if you have an influence to the hostile manner down there, and your rights are a, you know, thing to the side, you can own a gun in Mexico if you're upper middle class. There's one gun store in Mexico.
Wow. One gun store in Mexico?
It's a single gun store in Mexico City. And the only way you can buy one is you have to fly there.
Mm.
Wow.
You get a bunch of paperwork and buy an overpriced, underpowered caliber to be able to defend yourself.
Like what? Like a 22?
Guns 380. A 380.
It's not bad.
You can't get a 9mm down there. That's military only.
Yeah.
Low calibers, horrible, horrible quality guns. And it's a monopoly run by the military down there. And it's in their best interest not to arm people, so they make it really hard.
Speaking of guns, DW says, Tim, did you see Matt Gaetz voted yes on red flag laws? 2A or bust. Sorry, Matt, you're no longer MAGA. Also, SaveAmericaChat.com is number one for America First discussion. I'm going to look into that because that is a big no-no. Red flag laws are bad, bad, bad news. They do not work the way people think they do. And if Matt Gaetz voted yes on this, it's exactly the problem we have with Republicans. That's why I think the Republican Party is garbage. Now, you want to look that up?
Yeah, looking it up now.
Because I'll right now be like, that's dumb. So you guys are familiar with red flag laws?
I am. Yeah. I am. Like, it's, yeah.
This one is like one day you're at home And you get a knock on the door, and it's a bunch of cops being like, we're here to seize your firearms, your weapons. And you're like, says who? Says this warrant? What are you talking about? Well, you're a danger to yourself or others, or they're ours now. Now, that's not what 2A says. So the problem is you get no chance to rebut for the most part. If they came to you and said, we are going to make an attempt at a seizure, you have 30 days, you know, here's your court date or whatever. Still bad, in my opinion, because it puts the burden on the individual who has the right to keep and bear arms. But at the very least, you'd be able to go to the court and be like, no, it's not true. Someone's made a false claim against me, and I will not stand for this. But these things end bloody.
Yeah, you're guilty. Someone gets a medical marijuana card, and now they're no longer mentally stable. Someone jaywalks, now they're no longer mentally stable. Like, no, red flag.
No, this is they show up to a guy's house, knock on the door. Then the guy answers the door with his gun, which he legally owns, and they say, we're taking your guns. And he says, not from, you know, yeah, from my cold dead hands or whatever. Right. They fought, and the cops killed the guy.
Yeah.
That didn't need to happen. Yeah. This is not a good idea to go to Americans who are like my cold dead hands and instigate that kind of thing.
No.
And that's what you get. You get Republicans whose position is, I'll compromise Democrats, and Democrats say, give me everything or else. Yeah. So instead of Republicans being like, we want to repeal the NFA and all gun restrictions, they say, we're okay with some gun control, and then you end up moving further and further into the gun control territory.
As somebody that's not from here, I'm from Mexico, of course, and there's a part in the Constitution that allows for the possession of and self defense with guns in Mexico, but there's a single federal firearms law that just that deals with everything firearms related in Mexico. You're not legally allowed to buy a gun outside of the normal processes, but everybody has guns down there. Mm-hmm. You know, New Year happens and everybody's shooting guns up in the air.
What's the,
but main thing is I've been in places where having a gun is the difference between being targeted and not being targeted. I've been in places where everybody that has guns or having guns illegally, they're all criminals because they have a gun. But if they drop their guns, if they get rid of their guns, the cartels are going to run in and take their daughters.
Right.
There's a city Luke talks about. Do you remember that?
Sharon,
where there's no police, there's no cartels.
Well, they kicked out the police because the cartels were on the take.
Right.
They armed themselves. There's a problem with some of these groups down there. There was a Netflix documentary on one of these Auto Defensa groups that came up during the mid-2000s. They're basically cartel groups that now are being guarding home, you know. They just switch, you know, T-shirts.
Oh, and Sharon.
Some
of these groups.
We got a super chat. Smashing Random Key says, how does Sharon still exist? How was it even allowed to happen?
I mean, it's a very small community.
Mm.
And a lot of the weapons that they have are not the best weapons. A lot of them were stolen from the local police armory. And a lot of them are just hunting rifles or things that have been trafficked there like decades ago.
Mm.
The reason they're being left alone is it's too much of a hassle, and also they're too much in the public eye right now. So why mess with them? But eventually they'll drop out of the public eye and influence will start seeping in. How they usually kill these groups is that you can't self-sustain.
What happens when a bunch of extremely wealthy Bitcoin ANCAPs start sending resources so they can self-sustain?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Well, that's what we're hearing a lot of.
Yeah.
So when this went down, you have a lot of people who are like Bitcoin millionaire ANCAPs who are like, anarchy, freedom, no cartels, no government, I'm there, baby. And they're bringing their resources, they're bringing guns, they're bringing security.
I mean, if that's one way. Another way is basically just televising the revolution, giving them eyes.
Yeah.
One of the main problems that these communities have is that they don't have eyes. They don't have a way to cast out their story, their reality. I get bombarded with pictures, videos, and stuff like that from all over Mexico. And they say, dude, Ed, please post this. I was like, where is this from? This is from here. Okay. Just give me enough. I'll send it to them there, or I post it myself. But the main thing is that news coverage down there doesn't want to put it up because it goes against the government, and that's not good. And up here, they don't care unless it's like something specifically related or tied to the U.S. So main thing is giving these people voices. Give these people the ability to tell their own stories and televise a revolution. If they can figure that out, getting them guns, getting them bullets is only going to push them so far.
Really Now says, I have been to 20 different countries. Listening to you talk about racism is accurate. I have never experienced racism more than in Europe. Definitely, I'd say so. Particularly, people probably don't want to believe it, but Sweden, man. No joke. I go to somewhere like France or the UK, and it's like, okay, there's racism.
Yeah.
No, you go to Sweden, and it's like extremely ethnically homogenous. They pretend to not be racist, but boy, are they racist. I'm telling you, man, I'm like in a car with a guy driving into a black neighborhood, and he's shaking and freaking out, being like, don't make me do this, man. And we're like, calm down. What are you doing? We walk around the neighborhood. Everything's fine. Or it was like, I should say, like these migrant areas, a lot of Muslims, a lot of Somalis. And we walk around, and it was like, there's nothing going on, man. Yeah. Like, go to Chicago. And that guy would fall to the ground and melt into a pile of jelly if you went to Chicago. But it's crazy to me. But it's not just about stuff like that. It's about how, like, they don't hire people. They shuffle them into these pocket communities where they force them to fend for themselves. And then it's just brutal, man.
Yeah. I mean, again, I've had some weird experiences here in the States that are not specifically, I mean, just uncomfortable now. Like somewhere in Tennessee, somebody asked me if I was a Christian. And I said, yeah, I'm Catholic. So you're not a Christian. One of those. Okay. And I was like, okay. And I said, you know, I took it with humor because it's humorous to me, you know. But realistically, a lot of the specific hate that I've gotten in this country or life-specific, like, discrimination has been by some of the members of my own community, Mexicans. Mm. Second generation, third generation, people that call themselves Latinx for some reason. Yeah. I was like, ¿qué? Latinx. Cabrón. You know?
I wonder if VDIP gets mad when you say those things.
I mean, it's...
Do they? I have to know.
Yeah, I mean it's a whole thing where like
swearing the whole time.
Yeah, you're talking bad about Mexico. Mexico's a beautiful place. Like, what parts of Mexico did you live in?
Yeah,
well, I go down there to Cancun and go there. Like, that's, you know,
Mexico City's nice.
Mexico City's nice. It's beautiful. There's a lot of stuff that happens in Mexico City. There's, you know, and outside the outskirts of Mexico City, there's some pretty, you know, like Catepec, people listening to this that can tell me about some of the places out there that are pretty, you know, they have a lot of bad stuff happen. Yes, there's some beautiful places. There's some beautiful people. And I'm not in a fight with the people of Mexico. I love the people of Mexico. This part of me doing this and the stuff that I do is trying giving voices and telling stories about stuff that happens down there. But most of the hate that I've gotten up here has been people that are completely detached from that reality.
Mm-hmm.
So talking to the dad who is from Mexico, like, what's the first thing you did when you get out to this country? I bought a gun. Okay. And then you talk to his grandson. What about you? Oh, my dad's grand. He has a gun. Oh, uh-huh. It's like, oh, guns kill people. You know, are you like... It's scary, right? Aren't you afraid that people carrying guns up here? Like, they have guns down there. I was like, is that no? Like, that's a beautiful thing, you know?
Yeah. Do the cartels 3D print weapons?
No.
Because, the reason I asked is because you said in 2008 they were using these advanced technology, these drones. I'm wondering if they're...
No, I haven't seen a 3D print. It doesn't make sense for them. I've seen them being utilized a lot in Europe and stuff like that. And Myanmar, I think, has some subguns showing up 3D printed. Mexico, it has the largest commerce of firearms in the world next to it. So,
yeah.
And they just, the government actually just did a government in Mexico just sued a bunch of the firearms companies stateside.
Oh, wow.
Because of the guns that are being trafficked.
Oh, yeah.
Mysteriously enough, they didn't sue Sig Sauer because they're trying to buy guns for the military.
Interesting. I always tell people when they're like, aren't you scared when you go to these countries? Like, I haven't traveled in a while, but I used to fly. I was on two planes a week. And I'd be like, no, because people aren't crazy. You know, this idea that you have got like kind of two camps of people. You got these people who think they can ride their bikes to Tajikistan and it's going to be fine. And then they get hit and then ISIS jumps out and kills them. It literally happened. And then you have people who think you'll go to South America and they'll drag you through the streets and brutally beat you. And I'm like, yo. So some people believe stupid things and it drives them to do something. But it's not like their behavior isn't predictable. What I mean is, if you're going to an area where you know ISIS is dominant and you know what their ideology is and you know what they're looking for, okay, well then you're probably going to be watching for that and you got to be careful. But I was like, especially with going to like Venezuela and Brazil, South America stuff, I'm like, I know what a general idea of these people's motives, especially when it comes to like gangs, cartels, making money, running a business. You don't interfere. You don't bother them. You mind your own business. You're probably fine. My favorite though is when, we were in Venezuela and they told me like a very common thing. One of the most common things is express kidnappings. They'll pull up, they'll throw you in, they'll drive you to an ATM, say, take out your money. And then, you know, they'll ditch you or whatever.
Yeah.
But one guy told me a story where he got express kidnapped. and the guys are armed. They're pointing a gun at him, and they're like, they drive into an ATM. They're like, take out all the money. And he's like, I only have like a couple, you know, hundred, whatever. And then they're like, take it out. They take it out. And then they're like, get in the car. And he's like, okay. And they're like, do you want to ride, man? Is there somewhere we can drop you off? And he's like, yeah, I got to go to work. And they're like, yeah, no problem. Let's know where. He's like, yeah, it's around here. Thanks, man. And they're like, all right, have a good one, dude. Like, it's the craziest story, you know? You think that, like, but after they get their money, they're just like, we'll drop you off now.
Yeah.
Hope everything's all right.
It's a thing. I mean, it's a business. It's a business. It's a, they're human as well. I had this guy who was a cardiologist. He got abducted. He spent like 2 months in, and they did horrible things to him. You know, basically wanted to convince his family to pay up. When he was let go, he was let go because we did something and we found where he was being kept, and you know, we encountered the people that were holding him. When we were debriefing him, he kept asking about the people that were watching him because he was worried about them, because these people, you know, weren't specifically the ones responsible for abducting him, but they weren't responsible to look out for him when he was
They're being forced to do it.
Dog kennel that they had set up for him. And he was like, hey, are they okay? Like, are they fine? Like I was like, what? And like, Stockholm syndrome, basically.
Yeah.
They weren't fine. None of them were fine. And he went into a weird depression because of some of the stuff that happened to them. Like, it's a weird.
Wow.
And again, yeah, it's stories like that are, you know, there's my mom told me this long ago, and it kind of made things clearer for me. Nobody's against you. They're for themselves.
Exactly.
When you learn that.
This is basically what I mean when I say people aren't crazy. I try to explain this to them. You know what? If you know, like, what they're doing and why they're doing it, then it's like they're not going to randomly do things for the most part, right? They don't want to put risk themselves. They want to get something out of you. So understand the motives of the person to the best of your ability and then try and navigate the situations. And that means you might, like, I had someone try to pickpocket me in Spain. They didn't succeed. But I'm not about to pick a fight with the guy who's probably got friends around the corner operating as their backup. He comes up, tries to grab my phone, fails, and then I just back away and avoid the situation. Because what they do is they'll have someone waiting around the corner or someone sitting down who's their spotter. In case a fight breaks out, then they jump you. So it's like, he failed. It's better that he's like, my risk is too high right now. I'm going to walk, and I'm like, and I'm not going to get into a fight with him.
Yeah. Part of that normal is a fluid concept. The lesson that I give people is, you know, I can like walk around here with my iPhone, but somewhere else that's going to be a meal for a few weeks for somebody. Mm-hmm. I can walk around
salary.
I can walk around here with my earring, but I'll you know, go to Brazil and it's going to ripped off your ear.
Yeah.
Don't be a resource. Check yourself. Make a travel debit card with a prepaid travel debit card. Carry a travel phone. Carry a burner phone that you can give out to somebody. Just give out as a gift. You know, every now and then I do security contracting jobs, and the first thing I do is I go to the parking attendant, go to the major D, or go to the guy that knows everything, and I give him a phone, a smartphone that's worth probably like $150 or $200 on eBay, and I get the best intel on the planet there.
Yep.
I just call him directly. When I'm done, you can keep the phone.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
Key to the city. You know?
Yeah, dude.
You know, but again, it's weird to tell people like, Ed, so what can I make to defend myself? Buy a phone, give it to somebody there, make a friend.
Yeah.
Friends.
There you go. That's I what love you it.
Made. Invest in
yeah.
people.
Yep. All right, right on, man. Well, it's been rad having you. For everybody else, thanks for hanging out on this Friday night. Smash that like button, subscribe. You can follow me at TimCast. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. Make sure you check out youtube.com/castcastle. We're going to a top secret location this weekend, which is going to be a crazy vlog, which will probably be up on Monday. Maybe. We'll see how it goes, but it's going to be a whole lot of fun. Like, I can't say too much. We just got to go and film it first. But, Ed, is there anything else you want to shout out? Website, book,
Twitter? Check out my Instagram, edsmanifesto.com, and check out our new source, Demo Lair, on Instagram.
Demo Lair?
Demo Lair.
Thanks for coming, man. That was great.
Thank you.
Good. Love you, Ed. That was really, really fun, man. Thanks.
Thank you.
Lydia? Oh, I'm Ian Crossland, by the way.
Oh, yeah, I was just saying, are you tell who you are?
It's all about Ed, man.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, yeah, now that we know who Ian is, I really appreciate Ed coming a lot. I feel like I learned so much, and I'm going to have to go back and watch your different appearances on Joe Rogan as well. I am Sour Patch Lids. I push buttons in the corner for a living. Thank you guys for coming.
Man, it's been great. I think I'll have to, I'll never forget that Joe blew that death whistle, and it's all his fault.
That's it. Yeah, can someone get him on the horn?
Yeah.
Joe, what have you done? But hey, man, it's been a blast. And for everybody else, thanks so much for hanging out. And we will see you all at the Cast Castle vlog over at youtube.com/castcastle or timcast.com. Be a member. We got a huge library of content. You can always go there and search our massive list of podcasts with all of our guests. We got like a couple from Steve Bannon. We've got tons from Jack Posobiec, Will Chamberlain, all this awesome stuff. So definitely check that out. And we'll see y'all next time.
Bye, guys.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.